Hello, and welcome to the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where small press comics make one hell of a big noise. It's episode 166, and I'm Vince Hunt, creator of The Red Mask from Mars. And joining me are the creator of the brilliant webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And the Stimpy to our Wren, it's Mr. Tony Esmond.
I feel like we only chatted earlier.
Well, we did, Tony.
Yeah.
It feels like I'm always talking to you. Yes, folks, it's been a bit. We've got a bit of a special episode for you here, because we had it early on today as we were recording. We had a very special guest come on and give an interview, but we'll talk about that.
Excited.
Yeah, Tony got extremely excited, didn't you, Tony?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Are you okay now?
Feel a bit better now.
Yeah. You sure? Yeah.
No.
No. Blimey, that is exciting.
It was nice that he was all right.
Yeah.
It was nice that he turned out to be a nice guy. That's what I liked.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Yeah. Do you know who else is nice and gets me really excited?
Is it me?
Well, you and some of the wonderful people from Comic House. Hey! Yes, the sponsorship ad straight away. Bang. Now, it was almost professional and I completely just derailed it. Yes, but Comic House are the people that sponsor this lovely show. And for those who don't know, they are the indie comic marketplace with a difference. There's a huge selection of titles over there on the website and the database. And if you self-publish yourself and you've got loads of books that you want to mail out to people, then you can list your book on their site for free. And when you sell a copy, you just send it out to the lovely person who's bought it, and Comic House will only take 1 pence commission, which is awesome.
Good,
yeah, it's
great.
Awesome as a storefront, especially in the self-publishing world, where basically every penny counts. And what do? We normally busk and sell ourselves, don't we?
That's why we're broke.
Yes, but Comic House make it easy. They also have their own app, which is brilliant. We've used it many times if you listen to some of these past episodes. They've got a feature section on there, and they're putting stuff on there all the time. I mean, what's gone up recently, Dan, on the app?
Recently, we've got some Lobo Dynamite titles, including Green Hornet, Panther, Turok, Army of Darkness, and we've also got Lizard Men issue 2, which is a Comic House exclusive. Alterna is If Anthology. Surrealsville, and a whole lot more. And they're currently running a contest on Comic House on the Facebook page. If you go there and like the link and I think tag a friend in, and you can win physical copies of Comic House issue 1, 2, and 3.
Nice.
Oh, okay. I didn't realise that.
That's awesome. Yeah, so definitely head over to their page to find out more.
If I knew what tag a friend meant, I'd be fine.
Well, you just think it's a giant gamer tag, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's the whole of my life.
Yeah, yeah. Did you ever used to play Stuck in the Mud?
Oh, yeah, you used to play
that. One's that?
Yeah.
That's when we had to... This is going to sound weird. Well, it's basically like tag, but every time you tag someone, they have They're frozen, and they have to, stand like the Wicker Man, isn't it? And then the other people have to climb under the legs to free them.
They have to make up games like that in the country just to cheer themselves up.
I was waiting for that angle there, Tony. Oh, good. Vince and his friend running barefoot in the muddy fields.
Bloody hell,
their muddy little faces.
I'm not
grumping for apples.
Not building in sight.
I'm not a Huckleberry Finn, for sake.
Making a raft and going down the river.
Oh, if only. Making out of bins and trash.
Bin bags for clothes.
Yeah. It's become a very darker story, hasn't it?
Selling your ass for breadcrumbs.
I just said Vince in a dump.
We could change it to Vince has done a dump. On a 50-year-old businessman who paid him to. How's that?
Writes itself.
Do you know what? it started off being a joyful childhood tale of people enjoying their childhood and using their imaginations, and it just turned into a Tony Esmond sex fantasy. I'm not happy about this. But then again, every show turns into that.
Everything does.
But apart from Comic House, and if you go on to comichouse.com.
Fucking hell, you're such a pro.
Yeah, you know it. If you go to comichouse.com, you can find out more about the app and what they do. They've also got a 14-day free trial for the app. But once you do the free trial, you're going to sign up, and the subscription is only £3 a month, which is the price of, I can say it now, a price of a cheap comic, because how often do comics come any cheaper than that?
Apart from the Comic Mart, which we might get some later.
Yeah, which we are going to talk about a bit later. Proper nerd out. Yeah, so there you go, comichouse.com. Now, as we're not going to mess about this week. We've got an interview for you, and we're just going to get stuck straight into it. Now, I'm going to leave it up to our fine Lord Esmond to serve this one up. We're going to have a little bit of a chat about it.
We're going to warm you up a little bit first, aren't we? We'll give you a little warm-up.
Yeah.
It occurred to me, just before the interview started, that I have bought you both presents that relate to that are written by this guy.
Yeah.
I think you're fine. Did I buy you Nexus Volume 1 for your birthday? Was it last year, V?
I think it was, yeah. And it's like a 400-page book.
Big one. You've been sending me sexy pictures of you looking intelligent whilst reading it. What's happened. And I bought you Hexbreaker, the Badger graphic novel, didn't I?
Fantastic.
At the Mart last week. So that ruined the name of it. But we had Mike Baron on, who's like a huge comics hero of mine.
I didn't realise how many comics he had written that I'd read. I was like, oh Christ, he wrote that.
He wrote Punisher for 5 years, I think he said to us, didn't he?
Long time. And he's responsible for the character Microchip in the Punisher universe, of which I thanked him for in the interview.
And he still hasn't seen the series because he doesn't have Netflix. That's a shame that someone couldn't get it out to him.
Because I think that series does Microchip pretty bloody well.
Yeah, it does. It's a great character. These are great character moments with him, aren't there?
It's definitely for a different Microchip to the one he's written, though. But still the same character.
Good.
He wrote an Airwolf comic series. Did you know that?
Nice. Didn't know that, no.
Yeah. He wrote an Heir to Empire, which is a Star Wars series. For Valiant, he wrote Shadow Man, Archer and Armstrong, Hardcore. No, that's not that what you're thinking of, V. Ninjak and Turok.
Yeah.
He wrote Dead Man and with art by Kelly Jones, which I reread this week, which is fucking amazing. Yeah.
Just to clarify, this was Valiant in the 90s, wasn't it? Like the 94, 95.
Mm. Yeah, the early Valiant stuff. He did Sonic Disruptors, Batman, Dark Knight. He wrote some Showcase. He wrote Hawk and Dove, a series called Q-Ball. He wrote The Flash, a great run post-crisis when Wally West became The Flash. And they sort of depowered him a little bit. And that's a great series.
He did really a Bruce Lee miniseries as well. That's what I saw.
He did? Yeah.
Really?
Yeah,
wow.
He did. Yeah.
Well, you mentioned in the interview, he talks of martial arts, and he's a practitioner himself.
He is. Yeah, that was cool to hear, wasn't it?
I mean, reading Hexbreaker, you see quite a bit of that come through, actually. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
So you were saying you compared Hexbreaker to... which Van Damme movie is it?
Bloodsport.
So it's kind of Bloodsport and maybe Enter the Dragon sort of thing, isn't it? It's like a martial arts competition, isn't it?
Yeah, and he sort of gets called over. He's like selected from several fighters around the world to go to this kind of martial arts tournament, and the sort of the travel there and the various rounds of combat. I mean, they don't get to the tournament part of it till the last third. There's a lot of journeying along the way. It's really good. I mean, it's an interesting character that I wasn't too familiar with. I've read bits and pieces of it, but obviously with a trade, you can kind of get a graphic novel. That's the whole story, and they encapsulate the character really well.
And that's one of the things I'll say is, like, Mike Baron was always on the sort of periphery of my view. I mean, certainly, like, when I used to read Wizard magazine, like in like the early mid-90s and stuff, they would always, you know... When they were talking about the indie comics, weren't they? There was always like probably you had your Bone, what was
Mage,
it?
Maybe. Yeah,
Mage, and Nexus was always one of them, wasn't it? They always used to talk about that. So I was always aware of it. But I mean, like Dan says, I wasn't aware of how much Mike Baron had written that I had read personally. Yeah. But it has been like an absolute joy over the past couple of years, like discovering, you know, like Nexus, I had never read until like Tony, you got me that omnibus, and starting that from the beginning is such an interesting sort of book.
It covers
there.
So much stuff, doesn't it? It's like, firstly, he's one of the most iconic comic character designs, I think. It's got real sleek sci-fi, but it's also, it speaks to the time. So we talk a bit about the MTV generation. I mean, it's a story filled with literal philosophy, world sort of geography. So in one bit, the Soviets are, is a sort of failing power, and we talk a bit about that with him. It's a love story. It's a story about, does God exist? And there's so much in it.
You know, and
we forgot to ask him, actually. I had it written down, and I forgot to ask him about it. But it's actually had an animation pilot, which you can find on YouTube. We looked at that recently.
It's sort of like a short ad type thing, isn't it, for a next
one? Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, I'd watch the shit out of that.
Yeah, that looks brilliant. Yeah.
But it's fascinating reading the early issues. So I remember saying to you guys, like, because the omnibus that I've got starts from the very beginning, doesn't it? And it's got like 400 pages, but the first three issues are black and white, which Mike touches on.
Yeah, which were magazine size when they originally came out.
Yeah. And it's fascinating sort of reading those, especially for like Steve Rude's like early artwork. I mean, because not having that context of like reading them at the time or like reading the American comics, there was almost a 2000 AD style energy to that storytelling. You know, it could have sat quite happily in those sort of pages because it's sort of shorter and sharper to begin with, isn't it? The way the story
to me, it's a little bit if 2000 AD was made in the period of Mad Men. You know, it's almost You know, it's got that real coolness to it. Everyone in it is so fucking cool in it. You know. And you got to remember, First Comics, which is where, I mean, its real home was. I know it sort of originated at Capital, but some of the books they were doing, like Sable, E-Man, American Flag, Star Slayer, Grimjack, all these books are just fucking to a comic were amazing. Yeah. You know, unlike the fact that he said he was still in touch with a lot of these guys, you know.
Yeah.
Really nice stuff.
And definitely, if you can see any of like sort of Mike Baron's work, whether it be in the back issue bins of a convention, or if you find some on Comixology, we do talk about how some of his work isn't on Comixology yet, but definitely check it out, because there's a great energy to it. I picked up some issues of the Comic Mart of Badger Goes Berserk, and I've been I've been sending Dan and Tony panels of it all week, like, what?
One of the things in you know, like sometimes you read kind of like crazy characters in comics like Deadpool and stuff, and they come up with these kind of little off the cuff phrases which kind of feel like they've been written.
When you're
reading the Badger character, it's like, is this the character sounds absolutely mental.
I would not be surprised in any way, shape or form if all these writers that have written like Deadpool, you know, like Joe Kelly's classic run and stuff,
he's got to be
influenced by like things like Badger and stuff, you know. They must have loved sort of reading stuff like, you can see the influence when you read the comics.
But the thing is with Badger as well, it was funny and it was, you know, crazy, and you know, the characters in it are just out of this world. But and the main reason, if you see past that, you realise that he is actually a soldier. Who at the time, I know they've rebooted it, but he came back from Vietnam with PTSD. So it is essentially a comic with this sort of dark side to it as well.
He was
abused as a kid. There's talk about, you know, he's a protector of animals and this sort of animal rights angle to it and stuff. And in the new series that came out of Devil's Due, he fights Putin in one of the funniest things you'll ever see. Yeah, it's brilliant.
But, I mean, Badger is a character that's wonderful that he exists. Badgers are amazing anyway, so he had me at the name. But I think it's brilliant that he exists. I don't think it would be... You could do a character like that now because of, like, you know, the sort of... The times we live in, you know, the social media times, to have that, and, you know, people would target that.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, people wouldn't understand the satire. Yeah. You know? But, there's a lot of satire there.
Yeah, but because the Badger's been out and it's been established and, like, you know that can just keep going now, but if you were creating something like that now, it would be a lot harder.
People would go. I mean, some of the stuff in the one panel
relatively
go
questionable,
it,
but yeah. It's like the age of when it was made. Like people now are kind of like saying Apu in The Simpsons is problematic, whether that is or not, we won't discuss that. But back at the time, that was not the case.
Mm.
Yeah,
so as times have changed, that's kind of a snapshot of the past.
It is. And I think part of it as well, and we talked about this earlier, Dan, is that I think that he is drawing attention to people's prejudice of the time by showing these as these people, where it's not done seriously. He's like saying, look, they're not, this is, you know, this is a satire of this person. This is what you shouldn't be doing, almost, you know.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, it's very, very well done. And he's got a real sort of strangeness about him, his writing style, Mike, but he's got a real sort of pragmatic feel to it. So his characters are both strange and practical almost at the same time, which I kind of like, you know.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. And he's got, now he has plenty of prose work, which he's putting out as well. So he talks a bit more about that. So, just a lovely interview, basically.
And a real fanboy moment. There's not many hand in combat style characters that I'd put up against a badger and say they would win.
Yeah. And
he'd make a meal of Iron Fist, wouldn't he? You can just see it.
Yeah.
And that's down to the way that the martial arts are presented, like the fights within the comics.
He talks
about that, and if you read any of those comics and you see like a couple of pages dedicated to every movement of a fight.
Yeah, because the form is there, all the structure, it's bang on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you're about to hear this wonderful little interview with Mike. Thank you again, Mike, for joining us. But so for all you uninitiated, listen to this chat with one of the legends of it must be a legend of the indie scene.
Of course it is. Yeah. I mean, the first comics, Capital Comics, were in indie publishers, weren't they? The two big names at the time were Marvel and DC.
Yeah.
That's it, yeah.
So here you go, for your listening pleasure, here is our chat with Mike Barron. Right then, this week we have a very special guest. He's a writer whose epic list of credits include titles from the likes of Dark Horse, Marvel, DC, Valiant, and many more. That's quite a list, isn't it, Tony? He works in both comics and prose, which we're going to talk a little bit about. And most of you lovely listeners will know him as the creator of the character Badger, and alongside Steve Rude, creating the epic series Nexus. Yes, of course, it's our pleasure to welcome Mike Barron to the show. Hello, Mike.
Good morning.
Morning, Mike. It's morning where you are, afternoon where we are.
Yeah.
Thanks for joining us so early.
Mike's just had his breakfast, and we've just had our lunch. So thank you very much for joining us, Mike. I know you've got one hell of a list of credits you've got, and I know, Tony, you've read an awful lot of Mike's output, haven't you?
Yeah, I've been a huge fan since the Black and White Nexus, Mike, actually. But I wanted to ask you a little bit about, I've heard you say on previous podcasts that you got into writing through some prose that you read, and I know we should never take Wikipedia as read, but it also says that Philip Jose Farmer was a big influence of yours. Was that right, or is that a true fact?
It is a true fact, and I became a fan of Farmer when I was in England, bumming around the countryside when I was in college, and I picked up a bunch of his World of Tears books. I just fell in love with him.
Have you read To Your Scattered Bodies Go and the River Genius? Absolutely amazing work, yeah. Do you find that still influences you now, even when you write?
It influences me in this respect, that when I was reading Farmer, I noticed how he would examine a problem from all different points of view. What if this happened? What if this happened? What if this happened? Yeah. And that's became it's always lurking in the back of my mind as I make my way through a story.
So you still approach a story in the same way for a prose novel as you would for a comic, do you think, or?
Well, they've been coming closer together, but my method has changed over the years. Now, before I start a novel, I prepare a very detailed outline, and the outline itself is meant to be fun to read. My whole thing in writing comics or novels is to grab the reader by the throat and drag him into the narrative so that he can't think of anything else but what happens next, which is the essential question in all fiction.
Right.
So when it comes to the prose, like you say, a detailed outline, how many pages would this outline sort of be?
Well, they can run anywhere from about 5 to 10,000 words. To me, that's a detailed outline.
Wow.
Yeah.
But it's nothing. Frederick Forsyth, his outlines run over 100 pages of single type prose, but he leaves nothing to the imagination. I don't know that for sure, because there may, you know, I haven't read a Frederick Forsyth novel in a long time, but I know that about him because I've talked it over with his agent. To me, the outline is essential because you have to know where you're going. But okay. There's also a lot of gaps in the narrative, because if the writer does not surprise himself, he won't be able to surprise the readers. And I'm always looking for to surprise myself. My goal with every novel is that the ending should come as both a complete surprise and be perfectly rational and expected in retrospect. And that's what I aim for.
So I suppose that surprise element makes the writing more enjoyable as well, does it, for you? Or
yes, any accomplished writer knows that when you create credible characters, believable characters, that they will take on a life of their own, so that when you're writing along and you want to know what happens next, the character will turn to you and tell you what happens next because it's consistent with his or her character.
Do you find that sometimes you once you create these characters, they do take on a life of their own, and like I found sometimes, like when I create a character, I think it's going to go one way, but halfway through the story, the character then pushes me in a different direction. Have you ever had that the character sort of almost tells you what it wants to do?
Yes, and when I come to a place in the story where I don't know what happens next, I stop and I think about it, and then I ask myself, well, what is consistent with the character?
So why comics? So if you were influenced heavily from your college years by sort of sci-fi and fantasy books, what happened that turned you to the world of comics?
Well, I always loved comics. I got hooked on them with Uncle Scrooge comics by Carl Barks, who was a genius at storytelling, not just a good draftsman. But I learned as much about story construction from Uncle Scrooge and Donald Duck comics as I did from from Philip Jose Farmer and John D. MacDonald, who's my other literary touchstone, and the main reason I'm writing today.
Yeah. So he's a thriller writer, am I right in saying that, or a noir? Is that right?
Yes. He was a great noir writer of the 60s and the 70s. I'm sure you've seen the movie Cape Fear. There are two versions.
Yeah.
He wrote that, and it's typical of his work.
Oh, interesting. Oh. Okay. So you started, I think the first thing you did was for PC, was that right? You did a short story for one of their anthologies, is that how it started going?
That was due to me clearing our throats, and we were surprised and delighted when they picked it up.
Hey, so for those who don't know, the dude is Steve Rude, who I've heard a story where you were called down to a newspaper to meet him, is that right? Or
yes, well, we met, I was working at an insurance company at the time, and I got a phone call from a local newspaper editor, and he said, hey, there's some guy down here trying to sell us his drawings, and he draws just like you. Well, this guy was no art critic, and I've been trying to draw for years, and I'm terrible. But I arranged to meet him on the steps of the student union at the University of Wisconsin, and as soon as he opened his portfolio, well, I gave up drawing, and I said... And I said, what do you want to do? He says, I want to do comics, but I can't write. And I said, well, I want to do comics, but I can't draw. And that's how we got together.
Wow. So that would have been late 70s, early 80s, I presume, around that time?
That was about 81.
Right. Now, isn't 81 when around the time that Nexus started? Is that right?
Yes. Yes.
So how did that come about? Because that was with the dude as well. Yes. You moved over from that short story straight into that for... was it Capital Comics at the time?
It was Capital, and it was really luck being in the right place at the right time. We heard that Capital Comics, which at the time was the second largest comic book distributor in the world, wanted to publish their own comics. So we showed them encyclopedias, and they said, no, you know, this is not going to grab anyone. Give us a costume superhero. And I thought about it, and I wanted it to be dramatic. And the first notion was, well, what if somebody dies every time he shows up? And then I thought, well, what's the rationale for this? And it just grew until I realized, well, he is a reluctant executioner of mass murderers. And so I wrote the first 12 pages, and dude illustrated them, and we showed them to the boys, and they said, "Yeah, that's it. Now we need more to finish out the first issue."
Wow, and that's how it started.
Yes,
yeah, amazing. Yeah. So I mean, you played it was, initially. It was the black and white. People don't know there was a big boom of black and white comics in the early 80s, and the first five issues were black and white. Is that right?
Just three.
Three. Okay. But amongst that, you had a interestingly, you included a flexi disc in it.
That was the third issue. It's true. Not my idea.
Right.
And I'm not sure it was a good idea, but you know, what the hell? I'm willing to entertain anything. But, but the thing with the flexi is the voices that they add are never the same as the voices you hear in your own head.
Yeah.
So, for those who don't know, what did the flexi disc do?
It just provided all the dialogue in that issue, the third issue of Nexus, plus some music. And the music was pretty good.
And so a flexi-disc, for those who don't know, because we've got some young listeners listening, Mike, it's kind of like a sort of a fairly cheaply made record, I suppose, what kids would call vinyl now. And you can play it on your record player, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, it was bound into the comic.
Wow. I think that didn't Tim Truman adopt a similar process with Scout? I think he tried it as well back then. I don't know. Yeah. So, but I think the other thing I was going to say is it's also on YouTube. So we'll stick the link up in the show notes and people can have a listen and see what they think.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
I mean, that time was very much certainly with UK comics as well. There was very much, I hasten the word, gimmicks. You know, they were just trying to use everything to get readers in, weren't they?
People were less cynical back then. Yeah. It was seen as an experiment almost, I think.
Yeah.
Is that how you saw it, Mike, or is it just a bit of fun? And, you know.
Again, none of it was my idea. It was the Capitol's decision to say, yeah, go ahead and do it. But I met the guy who did it, and he seemed like a nice guy, and it was a serious attempt, and you don't have to listen to the record while you read the comics, so it was no skin off my nose.
Yeah.
So getting back to Nexus is still in many ways a long running series about in the sort of far flung future. I think it's oversimplifying it to say it's about a sort of hitman, because there's so many other elements to it, aren't there? It's almost like part Greek philosophy at moments and part political satire, and certainly satire of the MTV generation at the time. Is that something you were going for?
Oh, yes. It's a big experiment in world building that we just kind of threw together on the go. But everything made sense eventually. And like every other writer, I was inspired by real world events. And so I worked those situations into some of the stories.
Yeah. Because the world had gone nuts around the time with MTV, hadn't it? It just sort of burst out. And that obsession with, for example, Clone Zone, the Hilariator, and people like that must have been a reflection of people you were seeing, annoying people you were seeing on television, weren't they?
Yeah. Well, I love Clone Zone. The dude hates
me too. Yeah.
Yeah. I always try to throw him into every story now.
But that's part of the wonder of sci-fi, though, isn't it? Especially when you're building like a far-flung future, or it's like a space opera. You can make those sort of characters that people can look between the lines and see like influences, but for those like young readers who aren't up to date with politics or multimedia or whatever, they can just enjoy the characters for what they are, aren't they? Is that what that sort of freedom, is that what you love about sci-fi so much?
Well, but I see that freedom in every genre. I used to be, when I was a kid, I was a huge science fiction nut, and I read everything. I read all the classics, Clifford Simic, Isaac Asimov, Jules Verne, Robert Heinlein. I absorbed the entire canon of classic science fiction. But in recent years, I prefer more realistic stories, stories based in our own world. And that's what I'm looking for these days, are stories that draw you in and say, yeah, this is the world as the writer sees it. And you can either agree with it or not. But if it's compelling, you're going to read it. And as I say, my whole thing is to grab the reader by the throat.
Yeah.
Right. Because, I mean, there's other elements in it. We'll move on from Nexus in a second, Mike. But there's a couple of things I just want to mention about it. A couple of things that really occurred to me. It's also a love story, isn't it, in many ways?
Yes, Nexus and Sundra Peel.
Yeah, they're meant to be together. You can tell from your intention at the start. Is that right? Or
Yep.
And the other thing it plays with is it plays with the notion of God in a way, doesn't it?
Well,
you know, who's
yeah,
directing him?
In fact, we had a 2-issue series called GodCon.
Yeah.
Where all the gods hold a convention to decide who's really supreme. It was a really sophomoric concept in retrospect, and I wouldn't do it again. But it's out there. It's out
yeah.
there.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. Yeah, that was great. That was with Dark Horse, wasn't it? So,
Yes, it was. Well, maybe been first. I don't know. I forget.
Okay. And the thing about, apart from having probably the best name in comics, Horatio Hellpop, he's... He's also a troubled guy, isn't he? He's got a lot going on, isn't he?
Oh yeah, he's ridden with guilt. His father was a mass murderer, and his father committed suicide, and that always haunts him, you know. Because there have been a number of times when Nexus himself has considered it.
Yeah, and I know you play a lot. One thing that you really get right for me is writing. What in the early 80s you wrote about the fall of the Soviet Union, and
yes.
And I know it's something you've come back to, and we'll talk about that in a minute in Badger, but it's something that you spotted that was going to happen.
Yeah. I don't want to get into politics here.
No, that's okay. That's all right. Yeah. And the other thing I noticed, a couple of other things, little things I noticed, is the tank that Nexus jumps into is, I don't know, is it the shape of a bong? I'm going to say possibly.
No, it's in the shape of an hourglass.
Right, okay, right. Maybe I'm drawing too much into that. Yeah, okay. and the other thing is Elvis seems to play a part. Are you a big Elvis fan, are you?
Oh, of course.
So that sort of fat, drunk, dead on the toilet sort of, you know, Elvis, he appears, you know. He sort of turns up, doesn't he, almost?
Well, I he's an iconic figure, and I love to throw him into stories. He's made multiple appearances in Badger, and he appears again in a title we're going to produce next year called Tear the Roof Off the Sucker, which is a tribute to 70s blaxploitation movies and disco.
Wow, I'm on board, sir. Yeah. That sounds amazing. So whilst you were creating Nexus, your next creation was Badger, is that right?
Yes.
Also a capital, yeah. Now, he was a character with a very sort of complicated form of PTSD, I'm going to say. Is that right? Would you describe it like that?
He's a multiple personality.
Yeah. And I just wondered why you chose that as a character trait. Is there any particular reason?
Well, I was reading The Minds of Billy Milligan at the time, which is a great book, a case study of a multiple personality.
Yeah.
It was written by Daniel Keyes, who wrote Flowers for Algernon.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And one of Billy's personalities was a Russian mob enforcer. And I was just stunned by the description of how he would switch into this personality and become very physical and very effective. And I don't know why, but when, you know, I just threw it into the stew. I thought it would be interesting. And I knew a little bit about multiples because I'd read a bunch. And since doing the Badger, I have met several who had come up to me at comic conventions. But the beginning is always tragic because every multiple personality is born from a horrendous childhood trauma. Often sexual abuse, which is the case of the Badger. But the stories themselves, I say most of them are very funny. Some of them are very serious. We did a 4-issue miniseries called The Shattered Mirror for Dark Horse, which Jill Thompson illustrated, investigating the origins of his trauma.
Okay. Now, for those that don't know, Badger's got a series of personalities. So Norbert Sykes, the Badger... Emily, who is a 9-year-old girl. Pierre
Gastineau Grover DePaul.
He's an inner city African American, is that right?
Yes, tough inner city black.
Yeah. Pierre, who's a homicidal French guy, is that right?
Yep, yep.
And Max Swell, who's a gay architect.
Right.
Cool. So there's a lot to play with there. Is that you allowing yourself to just sort of run? You can jump about and play with different characters and
well,
save you getting bored almost.
Now it is, but you know when I put them in, it was often just instinctive. I didn't really understand why I was doing it. And that's the way a lot of fiction, a lot of my writing works, is especially with the novels now, is I will introduce an element early in the story, and I don't know why, but as I come near the end of the story, it becomes crystal clear and a key to the solution of the plot.
Okay, yeah. I've also heard you say, which I wanted to ask you a bit about, was you said that people don't get martial arts right in comics. Is that, where are you coming from on that?
That was always a pet peeve of mine since picking up the first issues of Master of Kung Fu. I love Paul Gulacy's art, but I would look at the fight sequences, and they were just incoherent poses. And there were no real techniques. They didn't follow one after another, and it bugged me because I understood that comics are the perfect medium to show martial arts unfold in a realistic and dynamic manner, but you have to understand how it works. And the reader does not want to see an extreme close-up of a fist hitting a jaw. The reader wants to see the action unfold clearly, like in a medium shot, from panel to panel, so that the moves evolve naturally out of the previous moves. And a good martial arts fight in a comic should have a flow to it so that you can practically see the figures moving.
So have you found yourself sort of directing the artists then? Because, I mean, you've clearly got a clear view of how you want the martial arts to be shown on the page, but an artist may not have that instinctual, you know, view that you have. Have you found yourself having to sort of direct some of the artists you've worked with?
Oh, absolutely. I pay a lot of attention to martial arts sequences. I describe them in great detail. If the artist is close at hand, we will act them out. And I've been known to draw them if I have to when necessary.
Do you have a martial arts background at all, Michael?
Yes, I do. I train in at Karate West in Fort Collins, Colorado.
Wow. Okay. Is that a lifelong love? Is it or?
Yes, I've been training for 40 years.
Wow. Have you trained under any interesting guys, or met up with any of the sort of the, you know, the Bob Walls of this world, or anyone like that, or?
Well, I had one class with Tadashi Yamashita, who was the instructor of my good friend Roger Salick. And I met Richard Bastilio, who was a good friend of my instructor when he was here in town running a seminar. But the guys I train with, I doubt anyone has ever heard with them, but they're world-class martial artists. There are so many great martial artists out there. It's just amazing.
Wow, that's really interesting. Yeah, have you ever tried any other styles? Because I know that Badger certainly does, doesn't he? He's kind of got that sort of Bruce Lee attitude to whatever works kind of attitude, isn't he?
Well, our school teaches a little bit of everything, as any good martial arts school must these days. Yeah. So we have regular grappling classes and jiu-jitsu, which, of course, that's the new fad. It's been the new fad on the block for about 15 years now. And a little bit of kung fu, and a little bit of this, a little bit of that. But my instructor, Kim Yi, is all about fighting. He's not really married to any particular style. But what he knows, he knows more about fighting than anyone I know. There's just so much that goes into it: footwork, how to hold your hand, combinations that work. He's big on feints.
Okay, yeah. Do you practice the sort of jiu-jitsu wrist locks and all that sort of thing as well? Do you? Or?
Yep. That's part of the curriculum.
Okay. Now I know Bill Reinhold did a lot of Badger with you. Was that something he was into as well, or?
No, I showed Bill all that stuff.
Great. So amazing. At the time, that is amazing. I didn't know that at all. Yeah. So you moved quickly from Capital over to First Comics. I think they were in Illinois at the time, were they? And then they moved to Chicago.
Yep.
That was quite a time.
Yes.
So that was an amazing. When you think of the books, you know, Chaykin, Joe Staten, Stephen Grant, John Ostrander, Grell, the Dude, Tim Truman, the people there were just incredible. It was there's never been a better group of comics coming out from a company in one time, you know.
I agree.
Did you get to meet these guys much at the time? Or?
Oh yeah, and we're still in touch today. I saw Bill and Linda a couple months ago. We were at a convention in Madison, Wisconsin, and I run into Mike Grell frequently at conventions. I haven't seen Tim Truman in a long time. He's an old friend of mine.
Right. He's great.
But we stay in touch.
Yeah. So that was, I mean, that was a happy place for you. I mean, you lasted, I mean, Nexus lasted, what, 80 issues at first, something like that, 60, 70 issues?
Well, really, we're over 120 now, and we're preparing a whole bunch of new material that will be coming out next year.
What keeps you, I mean, this is hundreds and thousands of pages of Nexus and all of those issues with different publishers, reprints, etc. What keeps you inspired about that character, you know, after all these years?
Well, it's what inspires me about any character or any story is I first ask myself, what's going to make a compelling story? Mm. And always boils down to, how do I grab the reader by the throat? And that's that. You know, I'm excited by the process. Often, a lot of those stories would begin with me just imagining a compelling scene.
Yeah.
Because, as I say, you got to grab them early on. You can't have a bunch of boring backstory. No, you want to open that comic and start reading, and your first thought is, "Wow, this is really interesting. I can't wait to see what happens next." And that's what storytelling is all about. Mm.
There is a knack to doing, you know, having that sort of storytelling without resorting to a cheap trick, though, isn't it? You know, without, I think these days a character death is always the certainly with some of the bigger publishers, they'll throw one of those in immediately to try and make that sort of shocking thing. Is that those sort of cheaper tricks? Are they something you stay away from, or you know, do you always try and figure out the new way to sort of grab the reader?
Well, it's not so much a new way because the storytelling elements are eternal, as far as I'm concerned. But you know, I don't want to go for a gimmick, but I want drama.
And
so drama. Look at all the programs and TV shows that promise drama in their titles, like Law and Order, Taken.
Yeah,
Homicide, Life on the Streets, they all promise drama in the title to hook you in. And some of them deliver, some don't, but that's what I'm looking for, as I'm looking at the mechanics of drama all the time.
Yeah, and much like TV as well, like it's always the first episode has to grab you, doesn't it? You know, otherwise you're just not eating.
It had better.
Yeah.
It had better.
Yeah.
And you've recently, I've been rereading your Devil's Due Badger comics again today, and that was a great little run as well.
Thank you.
I really enjoyed that. He does fight Putin, to be fair, in that, doesn't he? Which I really liked. I'm not going to give away the ending, but it turns out quite right in the end. And you've got more plans for Badger coming up, is that right?
Well, I have written a 48-page graphic novel, which we're going to kickstart.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Real. They don't. First, I don't have any money these days, but they say if I can raise some money, they will publish it.
Right.
And in this one, Badger joins the Iditarod, which is an 1,100-mile-long dog sled race that takes place every year in Alaska.
Oh my God. Now. Yeah, I think for those listeners who haven't read Badger, so far the way we've described it, he's a martial artist. You know, he's obviously got multiple personalities. But I would say, listener, you need to read some of these comics to truly comprehend. Like Mike and everyone that he gets on board, they just put the foot to the floor and go for it. From what I've read of Badger, is Badger, that must be so much fun to sort of create new stories for Badger.
It is. I'm more excited about writing than I ever have been before in my life.
Amazing.
Yeah. And that really comes across in the writing, Mr. B. It comes across something rotten with Badger, especially for me. Badger's one of my top comics ever. I love the fuck out of it. Just even you have fun with the martial arts. There's the bit, I remember one, and I haven't reread this for years, but there's one moment where his chi manages to overcome gravity. And just little touches like that. Just genius, and it has got some of the greatest names ever in comics. I'm just going to read out a few of the names. So Jim Wonktondonk, who's a Nam vet.
That's a real name,
right? Okay.
of a real Vietnam veteran.
Wow,
that I threw in.
Somebody you know, or?
I met him subsequently after doing the book, because he's from Madison, Wisconsin.
Right, I get you. One of my favourite ones is Reverend Wallace Wallop and his wife
Polly Mary wallet.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Meldrum Funmaker. That's a good name. Yep, yep. I'm going to call my wife that from now on. Connie Amaperson is another one.
Yeah.
And some of my favourite characters in it were the Wombat, who's nuts. The Yeti. Lamont A. Buffalo, which is the name of his buffalo, isn't it?
Right. That's,
right. It was kind of like Badger's Batmobile, in a way. Yeah.
That's true.
Yeah. Senator Bob Caston, who is a truffle-hunting, vampire-slaying pig with a wooden leg.
Yeah, when Senator Caston was a senator from Wisconsin many years ago.
Oh, wow, okay.
And so I named a pig after him.
You've got to read this, people. If you haven't read it, get on it. It's just, yeah, it's so much fun.
Yeah.
So you just, if we run just quickly through a bit chronologically, you must have been writing Badger and Nexus when you were hired by Marvel to write The Punisher. Is that right? Or
yes.
Did you find a lack of freedom compared to the sort of wackiness that you and all the creators were going on at First Comics? Did you find that you were sort of reined in a bit on Punisher?
Not at all. I had absolutely no editorial interference with Punisher for my first 3 years.
Wow. Brilliant. That's great to know. Yeah. And you've, for those that have only seen the TV series, the you introduced, is Microchip your character?
Yes.
Yeah. Have you seen the TV, the Punisher TV
series? No, no. I've been trying to see it ever since it came out. I don't get Netflix. Sooner or later, they're going to release it on DVD, and I'll see it then.
Yeah.
Okay. Great.
I will say thank you for Microchip, though. He's always been a character that I've really liked in the Punisher universe.
Yeah. And so, I think they do justice by him in the TV series. There's a something about him in there.
Yeah, yeah. I think it's one of the better sort of versions we've seen of him. I think.
Yeah. So. Did you have to do much weapons research for Punisher?
Yes, because if you made a mistake on the weapons, you would get the mail.
Really. Was that an experience that you actually had?
No, because I was very careful about the weapons, and I would research them to make sure that they're right. You know, you can't have a guy saying that the revolver will shoot 12 bullets or something, you know.
Yeah.
It's got to be realistic, because we have a lot of military that like the Punisher, and they know their stuff.
Mm.
Yeah. The did you ever have to go and fire? Did you go and fire any down a range or anything like that? Did you do any of that sort of thing?
Do you mean, am I a shooter?
Yeah, that's what I mean.
Yes, yes, I am. I got my first gun when I was 12 years old, a 410 shotgun, because I grew up in South Dakota and we would hunt pheasant.
Right.
First gun was a shotgun. Oof.
That's mighty, yeah. We're not used to guns over here, Mike. It's not a big thing with us, so it always comes as a surprise when people are, you know, the sort of open carry thing you guys have got.
There's no open carry where I live. I live in Colorado, and I've never seen it. And besides that, open carry is just an incitement to irritation. You know, that's why we have concealed carry license. Nobody should know that you're packing.
Right. Yeah. Okay. You've never been tempted to carry at a convention. I know I have been a number of times. You've got to do it.
No, I've never carried a gun with me. Never. I don't. You know, I've never seen any reason for it. Let's be realistic here.
Yeah,
I agree.
Speaking of conventions, though, how has the convention scene changed for you over the years?
Well, I think that the biggest thing is the they've gotten away from comics, and now they're all about the celebrities.
Mm.
Yeah.
And the second biggest change is the rise of the cosplayers, who sometimes comprise up to 30% of the attendance. Mm.
Yeah.
And as somebody who's there to sell books, it's a little irritating because cosplayers never buy anything.
Yeah. I've said that a number of times, Mike. Yeah. Yeah. I agree with you, mate. Yeah. Totally. Yeah. Yeah.
Have you had any people cosplay as any of your characters?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I've seen several Badgers and one Sunder Peel.
Oh, okay. Uh-huh. Cool. Yeah. Do you ever take him in the car park, give him a kick in or anything like that? Or is it...
No. No, of course not. I'm very flattered, you know.
Yeah.
I'm delighted that someone would think enough of my characters to dress up as them.
Yeah,
I agree. Now, while you're on the Punisher, you got involved in quite a lot of crossovers, didn't you? I'm looking at a couple of annuals at the moment, and you got involved in Atlantis Attacks and Life Form. There's a Moon Knight crossover I've got in front of me, and also you crossed over with Luke Cage for a couple of issues, didn't you?
Yep.
Was that fun to do? Was that something that was highly organized, or how did you feel about that?
I'm not sure how that came about, but I've always liked Luke Cage. I'd love to write the character because he's my kind of character. He's a street-level vigilante with no superpowers.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. Do you prefer the street level to like the bigger sort of like more powerful ones? Because I know you had a run on the Flash as well, didn't you? Which is quite that's a bigger scale character. But do you prefer street level to those bigger characters?
Well, I prefer stories that I believe could actually happen, that I can enter into them wholly and not have reservations and think, oh, that's ridiculous. You know, the guy's levitating and flying around like a flea. You can't do that. And so I have a problem with most modern superhero movies. I watch them and I enjoy them, but they're not my favorite movies. The movies that stick with me are the movies that stink of reality. And you think, yeah, that could happen. Or they just present themselves in such a way that you buy into it totally.
And anything come to mind you'd recommend as a movie?
Well, a number of them. I'll mention a couple of my favorites. One is Man on Fire, starring Denzel Washington, which I think is a masterpiece.
The Tony Scott movie, I think, isn't it?
Yeah.
Is
yeah.
Right? Yeah.
The Drop, starring James Gandolfini and Tom Hardy, which is just a masterful little noir film. Nightcrawler, starring Jake Gyllenhaal. Yes. Which to me was a taxi driver for modern times.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay. Wow. Yeah. Okay. And Gyllenhaal, high praise. I must give that a go.
Yeah. Gyllenhaal plays a truly dislikable human being.
Does he in that? Oh,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Very dark, but very interesting film. That is.
I'll give that a go. Yeah. I mean, talking about stripping characters back, you inherited the Wally West version of Flash post-crisis, didn't you? Was it your decision to take him back to he couldn't sort of vibrate his way across dimensions and stuff like that, could he really? He had a speed limit, and you had him as a almost like a delivery. He sort of ran across country delivering stuff at the start of it. Was that your conscious decision?
Yes.
Wow. Okay. And they were fine with that at DC, are they? Because it was a nice, it was a great run. It was sort of slightly isolated as well. It was sort of isolated from a lot of the other DC universe for a while. Was it more enjoyable for that reason?
Well, I don't know how enjoyable it was. Because, I did it as a creator. And of course, everything I do is I have to entertain myself before I'll entertain others. But I don't want to be solipsistic about it. So... I believe that I have the gift that I'm a creature of pop culture, and I love the stuff that the millions of other people love, and so I try to create that kind of stuff, and if it appeals to me, I trust it will appeal to others, because I don't think my tastes are too far off the beaten path.
Yeah. And then you've worked for various companies. You've done some Star Wars stuff, haven't you? And you worked for Valiant on loads of titles over there.
Yes.
Good fun. I mean, some of those characters, you know, Archer and Armstrong, I can see being right up your street.
Well, yeah, I'm a better writer now, and I wish I had another crack at those characters, but I'm pretty busy these days.
Yeah. Okay. Well, that's a good segue, because I have in front of me a copy of Banshees, which I've been reading, and which is one of your many novels. You're well into double figures around your novels now, aren't you, Mike, as I understand it? Is that right?
Well, I think I have 11 out, and there will be three more out shortly.
Okay. So for those that don't know about, for example, Banshees, what is that one about?
A satanic rock band comes back from the dead.
I'm all over that. I need to read this.
Dude, the cover of this is right of your street.
I'm looking at Mike's web page now, and I saw Banshees, and I thought, right, I need to get that.
Notorious for their satanic lyrics, drunken excess, and rumours of blood sacrifices, the Banshees shocked the world with their only album, Beat the Manshees. A Are you a metal fan, Michael?
A little bit, not wholeheartedly. I'm not a headbanger. I like Def Leppard.
Bit of Deep Zeppelin, Purple. Maybe. Yeah.
But to write a book like Banshees, I'm guessing though you must have. Did you give any of those things a try to sort of find out, you know, the behind the scenes when it comes to like black metal and death metal and all of that kind of stuff?
Not really. I have just absorbed so much over the years that I felt pretty confident writing it. Because, you know, for years I was music editor of the Boston Phoenix, and it was my job to go out. Yeah. I'd go out night after night and listen to bands and talk to the musicians and write about them. And because, I love rock and roll and I'm well steeped in its lore, I just absorbed all that stuff. And so I had a wealth of material in my head to use on the novel.
So are they a sort of a bit of a hair band, hair metal band, that sort of period I'd put them at? Is that right? Or
Let me take a look at that cover, see how hair metal they are.
Maybe a tiny bit, yeah.
You know, because you can't, I don't, I classify bands by their sound and not how they look.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So is that a series you're writing? Is that the only one of that series?
Oh, it's the only one. It's a standalone novel. I do have a continuing series. It's called Bad Road Rising.
Yes, I was going to ask you about that one. So what's that about?
Josh Pratt was a reformed motorcycle hoodlum who went to prison, found God, came out. The only work he could get was delivering summons for lawyers. But people keep coming to him with their problems because he knows how to get things done. There's a lot about motorcycles, but you don't have to be a biker to enjoy these novels. He's my attempt to do Travis McGee, was John D. McDonald's series character. Anybody who's familiar with Jack Reacher or Philip Marlowe will identify with the character. You know, he's an anti-hero. He's a bad man turned good, trying to do good in a harsh world.
Yeah.
The stories can be extremely violent, but there's a lot of humor in them too, and some romance.
So you've got another book called Helmet Head, which is also about a motorcyclist who cuts off the other heads of other bikers with a samurai sword, which is immediately I have to read this one as well. But are you a motorcycle enthusiast?
Yes. Three words about Helmet Head: Nazi biker zombies.
Right, I'm in.
There you go. Yeah.
Nazi biker zombies.
Was that the first three words you thought of before writing the book? Did you think of those and just thought, oh, I need to write something like that, you know?
Yeah, in a way. And that was the first novel I published. I've learned a lot since then. I'm not it could be better, but we're working on a graphic novel adaptation, which is better. But, you know, I'm happy to have it out there. And if you dig Nazi biker zombies, you'll enjoy the novel. And who doesn't?
Who doesn't? Yeah. All our listeners do. I know that.
What was
the learnings that you took going from after like so many years of like comics to step fully into the prose field? You know, was that much of a learning?
Yes, it was. It took me a long time to learn how to write a novel because I'm a slow learner. Mm. But I had some very difficult years in the first decade of the new century, very difficult years where I wasn't writing. And because of that, I can't really explain it, it helped me see things more clearly.
Okay.
So now I'm very confident of my writing. I'm not somebody who agonizes over every sentence that I put down and wonder if it's any good. I know it's good.
Yeah. You have to have belief in what you're writing, don't you? Otherwise,
and confidence.
You, and you've got to enjoy doing it. If you're not enjoying it, then what's the point in doing it? That kind of thing.
Yeah.
Do you set yourself like a number of books a year, or a word limit a day, or anything like that, or are you now comfortable to just let it come to you?
I write about two novels a year.
Yeah.
Right now I'm very busy with comic book work, so I'm not working on any novels, but I will start my new Josh Pratt novel shortly. It'll be the 8th.
Mm. What size novel are we talking about? Because, like, obviously, in this day and age, you walk into a store and a fantasy novel is about 2,000 pages. But what kind of word count are you talking about with your books on average?
I aim for 80,000 words.
Oh, nice, nice.
Yeah, okay. Yeah. I don't write huge star-spanning sagas, and you'll never see my books in a bookstore because my publisher, Liberty Island, tiny little publisher. And most book sales these days are over Amazon. They're all available. They're all available.
That's where I got mine from, Amazon. Yeah. It's sort of print on demand type thing. Or...
Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Because there's a few names in the credits here who I recognize from comics. So Kevin J. Anderson, he's a comic book guy, isn't he?
Well, no, Kevin is a science fiction writer. He writes the Dune novels. Now, Kevin has dabbled in comics. He's written a number of Star Wars novels. He's my publisher. For Helmet Head and a number of other novels, but Kevin is somebody who dictates his books while he's tramping through the mountains.
Oh, I've heard this. Yeah. He wrote some of the Superman novels as well. I think he wrote a Krypton novel for DC a few years ago and stuff like that. So that's an interesting way, because I know that Groucho Marx did the same, didn't he? He dictated. He never wrote anything down.
Well, I don't know about that.
Yeah.
But in my opinion, it results in a different tone and a different narrative voice because Kevin's novels are often enormous star-spanning sagas of 500,000 words or more. Why wait, 500,000 words? Nice! But, you know, a couple hundred thousand words. And so he takes an omniscient point of view, which is different from what I do. I like a very close personal point of view.
Right, okay. Because like you say about the Dune novels, he's writing that with Frank Herbert's son, isn't he, I think? Is that right?
Brian Herbert.
Yeah. You must have been a fan of those books if you've read Heinlein and all those books.
Of course.
Yeah, amazing stuff, isn't it? Yeah. And we interviewed quite a few comic creators who are finding at a certain stage in their career that they're really enjoying writing novels. I know Chuck Dixon does, and I know we're friends with Pat Mills, and he's taken to writing novels now as well. Is it a natural progression, do you think, from comics to novels?
Not for everybody. I know a number of comic book writers who've tried to write novels that have been disastrous.
Do you are you actively talking to Marvel or DC or any of the big companies about doing anything?
I've been pitching them for years, and they just don't return my calls.
Right. They're lost, mate. Yeah.
I ran into C.B. Sobolski in Connecticut a couple weeks ago, and I said, I introduced myself. I said, C.B., can I pitch on a Punisher story? He said, of course, Mike, anytime.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Well, I've written him 3 times, and I've never received a response.
You'd kill. I mean, you can see your writing influencing people like Garth Ennis and Morrison. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's so much of what you did on Nexus and even, you know, The Punisher, and just you can see it everywhere now. And it's a real shame that they won't have you back there.
Yeah, it is a shame. It's because I got more to say on that character, but that's all right. I'm not lacking for work. I'm very busy. I feel that they need me more than I need them, but they just don't know that yet.
Oh well,
I think you're right, man.
Yeah,
I agree completely. Totally. Yeah. So you've got your novels. Is there anything else? Any other novels you got? You've got sort of bubbling, brewing. Anything you're thinking of doing at the moment?
Yeah, I have a novel coming out in a couple of months called Disco, and it's a real shift for me. It's about a kid who adopts a mongrel pup and raises it to be the world disc dog champion.
there are moments when I do this show that I think, did I hear that?
Yeah, it's Rocky for dogs.
Amazing. Oh,
I can see the movie now.
Yeah,
I can see the poster. Yeah.
And I can already hear a lot of our listeners pre-ordering as we speak.
And I know when we spoke before, we briefly had a chat on the phone, and you were hinting at some other comic sort of products coming out. So you've already mentioned Badger, but there's some more Nexus coming, is there?
Yes, we have a raft load of Nexus coming next year from Dark Horse.
Brilliant.
And I'm working on a title called Offworlder for Cautionary Comics. And I've posted some art for it on my Facebook page if anyone is interested.
Yeah.
In fact, I also posted the cover on Twitter.
Okay.
Nice.
Yeah, I think I saw it. Yeah, it looks great. Yeah. And what's that about, that one?
Well, Offworlder is about a 7th century Scotsman who's absorbed in war with Viking raiders when an Egyptian woman shows up on his beach one day and says, we got a bigger problem. The world is being invaded by an alien race that wants to kill all humanity. And they say, you're the only guy that can save us by making a horrendous sacrifice. And this is working off of Ben Henderson's outline. Offworlder is his creation.
Okay.
But I finished the first issue, and it's very absorbing. You know, it's like everything else I do, my goal is to grab the reader by the throat. There's nothing silly or extraneous or
So that's more straight down the middle, sort of serious sort of story.
Oh, sci-fi or fantasy?
Yeah,
sci-fi.
It's very serious. It's very serious science fiction.
Yeah. You got an artist attached to that, Michael?
Jordi Armengol.
Right. Okay, I must look them up.
Yeah. You saw the cover I posted on Twitter.
Yeah, it looks amazing. Yeah, cool. Anything else? What else you got coming up? You got any plans for it, or you know, anything? What about bucket list, Mike? Is there anyone left on your? You've written for nearly everyone, and is there anyone else? Any other characters you just like love to have a go at?
Well, I love my own characters more than
foremost,
other
yeah.
characters, and I just mentioned we're going to try and crowdfund this new Badger graphic novel.
Yeah.
And what it's about, it's a guy moves in next to Ham, and he's got this big factory where he produces genetically modified foods. And it comes down to a rivalry between sorcery and science. And so they both enter these teams in the Iditarod to decide what's better. And whichever team wins, that's going to settle the question, because Ham's going to cast a spell over his dogs. And the other guy is going to produce these genetically modified super dogs that can run faster.
Right. Okay.
So
for those that don't know, Ham is basically a wizard that Badger lives with, and he sort of sacrifices animals behind Badger's back because he knows Badger is the ultimate animal rights warrior.
Well, now he's got a new gimmick. He goes after these. He pays to capture crocodiles that have eaten people and dogs down in Florida, and then he flies them up to Wisconsin to sacrifice. And they're much more powerful than your normal animal because they've already partaken of human flesh.
Right. Ham's a great character. Love him to death, yeah.
In all seriousness, Mike, when you think of an idea, has there ever been a point where you thought, that's a bit too crazy?
Oh, sure.
Really?
All the time.
Would you care to share one, possibly? Nothing you can say, or?
No. All right. Here's one.
Go on.
Vampire steaks. STEAKS. Vampire steaks. Are these steaks made out of vampires? What do they taste like?
That's basically a two-word pitch that I would buy a copy of. Yeah. There you go.
Yeah.
I mean, I know you mentioned him earlier, but I wrote down on the list of questions, have you got any bucket lists and anything you wanted to do? I have to say, the one that I'd love to see you do is a Power Man Iron Fist series. I think that would just be. I always loved the team up you did with Nexus and Badger, and it's just so great. I just think you get that sort of idea of them playing off each other so well. Would that be something you'd have a play with, possibly?
Sure. I'd love to do it if they'd offer it to me, you know.
Yeah,
whoever.
Yeah.
If somebody comes to me with a job and say, I'll pay you to do this, I'll figure out how to do it.
Yeah. And my other question is, why isn't Badger on bloody Comixology? I've been moving around boxes finding all my Badger back issues this week.
I don't know.
Yeah.
I will ask the boys.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. Mike, this has been an absolute bucket list for me, mate. I've really enjoyed this, and being a British fan, it's difficult to meet and have a chat with you, and this has been an absolute pleasure. Yeah. Having you ring me was just one of the highlights of my week last week. I was to the boys when we met up. Yeah, it's just ideal.
And Tony, yeah, and Tony was a Badger. He was a Badger expert when we started this show. So, and I picked it up a bit more recently, and I just thought, well, this is going to be fun talking to this man. As soon as I read it,
yeah.
Thank you, gentlemen.
No,
and we've got a third host who couldn't sadly be here today, but he's just read Hexbreaker and he's been messaging us with panels from it all week, saying how brilliant it is.
So, all our lovely listeners out there, like, if you can find back issues of Badger, like I say, the Kickstarter is going to be coming up soon. Do you know when the Kickstarter will be going live, Mike?
No, well, we're waiting for a cover, because you can't launch a Kickstarter without art. And I'm working with a local artist who's just a monster. His name is Jeff Slemons.
Okay.
And as soon as he comes through with the cover, then we'll start.
Amazing. Well, you let us know, and we'll shout it to the heavens.
I will do that.
Yeah, yes. And we'd love to have you back on, mate, to talk about it.
I would be happy to.
Absolutely brilliant.
Yeah. Awesome.
I'm absolutely loving Banshees as well. It's from just the opening paragraph of the old Mercedes driving down the dirty path of a road. I just thought, right, this has got me. Just brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
So, and all of your books, e-books and the like, are available on Amazon. Is that right?
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. Do you have audiobooks as well?
Well, they're turning Banshees into an audiobook. I'll have to check in on that and see if it's done.
Amazing.
Great.
Yeah, so go find lots of Mike's work, because it's thoroughly entertaining. And you've been a wonderful guest, Mike, so thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you, gentlemen.
So there you go.
Another, how good was that?
Yeah, great interview from a legendary creator. So
I hint at it in the interview, but we had a phone conversation the other day when he was meant to be on a couple of weeks ago. I don't think it's any secret, and I cancelled with him. He cancelled, and we had a phone chat. And even on that phone call, I said, "Mate, this is the fucking most exciting phone call I've ever had." I know you're in your car at 9 o'clock in the morning going to a comic convention to man a table, but I've got to tell you, this is fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
At which point he accused me of being an Australian, and so I had to say right. But otherwise than that, it was good.
And then there was one point where you probably don't. Hopefully, I've managed to edit out okay. Where Mike had to step away for about 3 or 4 minutes, and while he was doing that, I just said to Tony, "You're right."
Yeah.
He's like regressed into a child. He's like, "Yes, I'm a bit excited."
And he's got a dog. People with dogs are cool. Yeah. I'll tell you.
I've edited it out. I should maybe add it at the end of the show what the name of the dog is, because it made us laugh.
I'll do that bit because it made me laugh. Right. Larry and Dave.
Stay tuned for after the show when you hear a little bit of pet talk.
Yeah.
Mike Barrow.
Post-credit stinger.
Yeah. So thank you very much, Mike, for joining us.
Yeah, cheers, mate. Brilliant. And we're definitely getting back on for that Kickstarter he talks about. We'll definitely get back.
And I'm definitely get my hands on some of those e-books as well, the novels. Yeah.
Yeah, that Banshees I'm reading is great.
Banshees really sounds like it's right up my street.
It does, yeah, it is, mate.
Is that I've heard him talk about one with a heavy metal band.
That's the one.
That's the one.
Okay. Yeah. Sounded really interesting.
Yeah. So there'll be a few links in the show notes this week.
Nice. I'll tell you what's worth mentioning as well is if you can find it, I think it's called The Dude or something like that. There's a documentary on Steve Rude. It's quite a poignant one, actually.
Is it available on YouTube?
I watched it on YouTube earlier. I'm not sure whether it's meant to be on there, I've got to be honest with you. Okay. But there's a version of it on there. But if you put Steve Rude documentary into YouTube, you'll see it. And Mike's on that. Mike does a couple of sort of talking head moments in it. It's quite sad. A guy's like a hugely talented artist, and I know Mike talks a bit about him there. One of my favourite artists. He's had a few mishaps in his life, I think, put it that way. Mm. Yeah, you'll see it. Dave Gibbons is on it, and I knew I'd heard from Dave Gibbons that they were pals, and that he'd been over, because Dave lives not far from me, and that he'd been over and sort of shown him around near where we live and stuff. And he sounds like a hilarious geezer. Yeah, he does this workout video in the middle of this documentary, and it involves jumping over something in the garden and lifting a television and stuff.
Amazing.
Watching. Yeah.
Amazing.
It's fucking great.
Yes. So look for all of that in the show notes and the sticker at the end of the show. So thank you for listening to that bit. But we've got some comic stuff to talk about, namely we've got a couple of events that we visited recently. Tony, do you want to take it away first?
Yeah, I had last weekend. We recorded earlier. We recorded on the Thursday last week. So I had Friday. I went to Nobra and picked up all the stock for Thought Bubble and hung out there. And there's we've got some marvellous books, which I'll mention in a minute. But on Saturday was Nice. So I went to Nice. It was a great day. Garvey, he was there selling his wares. Had a good chat with him. Chris Sides, Chris Imber, Chris Jenkins, Claire and Ken Reynolds, Gary Watson, John Late, Jay Martin, Gronje McContry, and Matt Rook. And apart from meeting those splendid people, I also got to meet Don McGregor, who, how good has my the last sort of 10 days in my life been?
You've been loving it. Life.
Yeah.
Fucking hell, yeah. I was hanging out with Gary Watson from Comics Anonymous, a previous guest, a good pal of ours. And right in the middle of a sentence, I went, right, Don McGregor's just arrived, I've got to go. Legged it off to his table and sat there with him and Marsha and just chatted to them. And we're sort of slowly aware that there was a crowd gathering behind us. And he's like, no, everyone come round. I've got a few stories to tell. And he was an absolute fucking delight. He didn't disappoint at all. What a top bloke. Absolutely brilliant. And we talked about Killraven and Panther's Rage and all that sort of thing. And he was just perfection. Had a real good time. The only thing I will say, and I know we talked about whether we'd mention this or not, but I will say that there were an awful lot of pros tables empty. So I left about one on the Saturday and probably around half the guests had turned up at that point. And I know that a couple of other people who've messages were there for the first few hours on the Sunday, and there was an awful lot of empty pro tables. We've since found out that there was an in-shop signing at Close Encounters around the corner. Now, I think the ticket was £25, top of my head.
Yeah, that's one of that the convention. I want to say, and excuse me for not having knowledge about this, but I want to say that's one of the more expensive ones.
Yeah, and I'm quite prepared to pay for it because he gets guests in, or the convention gets guests in from the States and stuff. And okay, I can dig that, you know. And that's and I understand it's not a big, it's not a big convention.
Yeah, it's relevant recent sort of name guests, isn't it? It's not like
We got Don in, and there was Donny Cates was there. I didn't see Donny Cates at all. And the story is that Donny Cates didn't get back to his table till 3 p.m. Now I know he had a talk. He did a talk or a panel at 11 on the Saturday. Yeah. But I was sort of busy and missed that. So everyone was queuing up at tables to meet him and he didn't turn up. So quite a few of us left. We're signing, which is free round the corner. I've got a few questions to ask about. I don't know. What do you guys think?
Well, sometimes people will go to a con just to see one person.
Yeah.
And if that one person isn't there, they kind of, I can imagine they'll feel a little hard done by that.
Yeah.
I went to see Don, so I'm happy. I walked away fairly content that I'd got to meet him, and he's one of the people. But I wanted to see Donny Cates, and I was quite interested in seeing Dee Cunniff because I've met him since he's been on the show, and he wasn't there either. Then there was quite a few people who just weren't there. There was sort of three or four tables in length with no guests at them for most of the day.
The way I talk about it is this. Now I don't know what it's like for the US or, you know, all the other conventions around the world, so feel free to get in touch with us after this. But for me, the traffic of a UK convention seems to be, there's a lot of it, you're probably up until about 2 or 3, that from about 10 when you open till about 3 is probably your busiest time. After 3, everything is slowing down. People are dropping off. You know, families have taken their kids there. The kids are getting tired. Everyone's sort of going home. You know, because a lot of the UK shows are treated as like a family day out anyway, aren't they? So, you know, you're only going to have a certain amount of time to be there. So, if you don't, and you're selling your show on bigger name sort of guests being there. And quite right, you know, if you have to pay these costs for the guests to be there, quite rightly, you know, the ticket price would reflect that. You know, if people want to see those guests, then they'll pay the money for it. But with that in mind, I think the guests should, you know, wherever possible, they should be there to see the people that have paid for the tickets.
I'll say this, and I agree with you, mate, there definitely is. I'll say this about the convention. This is a convention that is built on names. Yeah. So it's not built on the small press. It's certainly not built on cosplayers. Mm. It's certainly not built on merchandise or film actors. Because
the small press guys did quite well, didn't they? I heard that it was quite a successful day.
Now, I got there early because I have the habit of going places early, so it gives me an hour to write outside the house sort of thing. I prefer to write in cafes and stuff. And I walked into, there's a McDonald's just around the corner, so I walked in for a coffee in there, and there was three or four tables of people who I recognise and have recognised from the last 20, 30 years as sort of quite, I don't know what you call them really, sort of hardcore comic collectors. I know I bumped into one at the Mart, which we'll talk about in a minute, and he felt the same way. And they were there really, really early in order to get in the queue, to get into the tables, to get in front of these people.
Yeah.
Because it's almost like a rush. As soon as the doors open, they rush to get in front of artists and writers to get stuff done by them, you know. I'm not saying they were all there. I mean, Alan Davis and Sean Phillips, they were there and they were like working their asses off, you know, behind tables the whole day. But there was a good swathe of people who just weren't there. And a couple of the guys who I saw rush in were just standing at tables, and you could see they just gave up, as I did. Gave up and went. And this is not a big convention. This is a convention that you could easily walk round in less than, if you just started walking, you'd walk round it easily in a couple of minutes. It's very small. It's nowhere near the size of True Believers or Leamington or even Cardiff. Yeah, it's a much smaller venue.
And obviously there's scheduling, there's lots of other things that I don't know going on that's being sorted out. So I'm not going to say that like these big name guests and stuff have to be there from the moment you open, from the moment you close, because of course
I can dig that. I completely agree with that.
But you know, I would say personally I'd like them to be there in the morning. You know, if they're there in the morning doing what they got to do, and then they've got to shoot off in the afternoon, you know, everyone.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. And if you go to the table and there's a sign that says Donny Cates will be signing between 1 and 3, then I'm cool with that. That's fine. You know, to come back, but there was nothing there.
Yeah, because we've seen it. We saw that, was it London Super Comic Con, where some tables, they were like, this person's going to be here at this table. And you'd see a queue. You'd see a queue start forming as soon as they, you know. And then you've got people, you know, the lovely people like Gareth Hopkins trying to organise
it. Control the queue. But that's what they rushed. Didn't they rush it? They rushed in for him, didn't they, for that guest?
Yeah.
I can't remember at the top of my head but they certainly rushed in for him, didn't they? And they saw so many to get in the queue to get stuff signed. Yeah. I know, it rubbed me up a bit the wrong way around that. And then I shouldn't get wound up, because it's not, in the grand scheme of things, it's not the most important thing in the world. But, you know, it's a few quid, isn't it? You know what I mean?
It's also a 2-day show. So, the £25 was for both days, wasn't it?
It was, right. It turned out I bought both days because I wasn't sure which day I could go. And then you guys said, oh, we'll do the Mart. And I thought, I'll go with you as well. So. Yeah, I bought both days. Some work gets in the way sometimes for me, and I have to usually, I'll buy both days because I know that one of those days I'll be able to get there. But there you go. That's a bit of money.
But we're extremely glad that all you small presses out there took advantage of all these people wandering around and sold some of your brilliant books.
Yeah.
So well done, everyone.
And Don McGregor, like, he's got a fan for life now. Do you know what I mean? I'm always a big fan of his, but you know, I'll buy everything he does now.
Yeah.
There you go. So, and I noticed if you follow him on Facebook, he went for dinner with Jonathan Ross that night. That's cool, wasn't it?
Lovely.
Yeah.
And then I went for a party at Sidesy's house, where everyone I mentioned in the small press pretty much was there. And it was just a sort of chuckle fest all night. I think I left there about 1:30, and it was still going. I think there was quite a lot of beer drunk. But yeah, it's good night.
Nice.
Yeah, so thanks to Mr. Sides and his lovely wife for putting on a little party for us. It was great.
Yes. Yeah. And then the Sunday happened.
Yes.
Where
Comic Mart action.
We all met up for the London Comic Mart to stare at some dirty paper and spend our paper round money.
I had an okay case of being overexcited, and you can pay a fiver to get in between 11 and 12, so I did that. I think you guys were still on your way, weren't you? And you were still on the bus, Vince.
Yeah.
I was texting you saying I may have got the deal of a century. I think I did quite well out of it.
You did indeed. Do you want to talk a little bit about it?
I got a shitload of early Uncanny X-Men for an absolute steal. Yeah,
the one of the issues was £55. I got it for a fiver, you know, that sort of thing.
Nice.
And it was a just got in there early, and the guy was saying, "Oh, we're clearing out these boxes. You fancy any of this?" And pulled a box out from underneath the table, and I went, "Yep." So by the time you got there, I think I was like a weeping mess.
Yeah. On a side note, a small side note, and we're going to have to talk about this more in depth at some point, I think. Do you think the Uncanny X-Men logo is one of the best comic logos of all time?
Yeah, it is great.
It is.
And the side box. I love that side box. Yeah. It was Byrne and Cochran X-Men. What you can do? They're amazing.
Yeah. So we all rocked up at the Comic Mart. There were some lovely people with us.
Yeah.
Have you got a list, Tony? You've always got a list. Go on.
The marvelous Mr. Prolix. He was there. He turned up. If you got the mailer this week, you'll see he's done a little article on what he bought. Dave Houghton, who was there, our pal, he ran off looking for something to do with the prisoner, didn't he? And then he sort of disappeared for ages, and I found him again. Yeah. Simon Russell, Simon got us a present, didn't he? Which is the Death
Cheers,
Race.
Simon.
Death Race 2020, wasn't it, by Pat Mills and more.
Is it Kevin O'Neill?
Kevin O'Neill, yeah, that's it.
Yeah. Sarah Harris turned up and bought more comics than I think you could carry.
She was only there for like 5 minutes. I tell you what, I salute you, Sarah.
I saw that photo and it's like, fucking hell, there's loads.
I felt quite cool because I was chatting to someone from my work who was a sort of business person I know, and she walked up and went, excuse me, can I just ask you a question about the Hulk series? What is this? And I looked like proper fucking intelligent, or either that or a real nerd, by telling her the answer. And she wandered off all happy. And then John Bishop was there from our Facebook page. Hi, John. John's a good egg. If you listen to Alpha Pod, you'll have heard he's done an episode on that. Very good it is indeed. We must get John on one day, actually. Yeah. He's a real big comic fan. And I introduced you to my mate from Dead Universe Comics, Ian Hine, didn't I? Just when you first came in, do you remember? Yeah, he's a nice guy. Top bloke.
Speaking of the Alpha Pod, it was great to Gareth Hopkins spent most of the day with us, and it was just great.
Gareth came around.
Point out an issue of Doom Patrol where they kind of parody like 90s Image Comics. So I snapped that up. I've yet to read it, but
I was going to mention him next, actually, because he judged our shit comic competition. No, he didn't judge it.
No.
Simon Russell judged it.
No, he won it.
He won it.
I fucking went with Glenn Danzig again. I thought Glenn Danzig cannot let me down, and the comic I bought was just so middle of the road and mediocre.
That's two for two for Glenn Danzig, isn't it?
Last time he saw me into the semi-final, so I thought, you know, Danzig.
Yeah.
For those that haven't heard, we do. You have to buy the shittest comic you can find for under a pound.
Yeah.
And then we have a competition as to who's bought the shittest one. And then the person who wins gets all the comics.
So it's a poison chalice, isn't it? Sometimes there's a lovely sort of roundabout way. You pick out something that you think is rubbish, buy it, look at it, and then go, actually, it's quite good. I quite like this.
Well, I did that with that Universal Soldier.
You got a Universal Soldier comic with a hologram on the cover. It's an amazing hologram. Hologram. Isn't that what you call it?
Hologram.
I bought a Stone Cold Steve Austin comic, and then upon reflection I thought, this isn't shit enough.
Went
for the Danzig one.
But there is a as yet unreleased photo of Dan gazing upon this Stone Cold Steve Austin comic with love in his eyes.
I wanted to pass on the magic and the majesty, so I left the comic like hidden in the pub.
Also, I pitched Dan like a sort of semi autobiographical comic that we need to write called Leaving Stephen, which is all about.
What was that about?
It was basically about Dan's journey to leaving the Stone Cold Steve Austin comic in the pub.
I feel a bit bad because you're telling me that I mugged off that bartender and I didn't mean to.
What did you do?
He was kind of like, I paid for what I was going to have to eat, and loads of paper started coming out of the printer, and he said something to me, and I thought he said, just being a bit
Are you going to paper your bathroom in that, or something like that?
But I didn't really hear it. I just thought he was just being fucking smart ass.
He just ignored him. I mean, to be honest, you didn't miss much, Dan. He was miserable.
I pointed to Vince and said, oh, do you want to order them, Vince? And walked off.
Shot him down.
Well, the laugh was on me because then my fucking food turned up late. Never insult the people that are going to sort your food out. No. It's a fucking rookie
cream choice. Cream your coffee.
Oh, God, yeah.
And then we ate food and then went, oh, should we go back and have another go round? And we went back in again, didn't we?
Yeah. No, go on, Dan.
One thing, the demographic of the people in there is very, like, shallow. It's like older white blokes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
just loads of older white blokes.
Some of them have no sort of thought to personal space.
Or hygiene.
Yeah.
A lot of the stereotypes that are in there.
You
think, oh, fucking comic readers, and you're looking, there you go.
Yeah.
That'd confirm a lot of what you think.
Yeah, one thing I missed this time around that I wish was there. First time I was there, there was like a old sort of like toy or action figure stand. It had some like old.
Yeah, there was. He wasn't there, was he? Because he's the one that had all the Italian comics that I bought. Remember?
Yeah, and he wasn't there. And like this time round, I was gonna get a lot more of that kind of stuff. So it was a shame. But there was a lot more sort of bootleg DVDs and
fuck things. Me, there was loads of bootleg.
So
stuff.
Much of that.
So obscure like 1950s and 60s TV shows.
Yeah,
there was literally a bootleg copy of all the episodes. Are you being served? Who do you do that for?
You.
Who comes in and thinks, oh, I know what I need today.
Yeah. There was one where they'd got all the like fan-made superhero films. They'd put them on a DVD.
Yeah,
you know, like Batman Dead End and Grayson and stuff like that. And I was like, okay, well.
Well done, you. I'll watch them on YouTube.
But we did pick up. We all got a little bit of a haul, so
got me Robocop 3, the miniseries.
Yeah, sorry about that. I honestly thought it was just a Robocop series, and then when I passed it to you, I thought, does that say 3 on it? 3. Oh dear.
Is that the one where he flies?
Yeah.
That was mostly made for the Japanese market, wasn't it? I think that one, that's what they said when they made it, didn't they?
But there was...
I picked up Briar.
For
£9, and I've got it for £2. That's all right.
Yeah,
he was sending me insulting pictures last night.
There's only one issue of that, isn't there, Briar? Is that
Briar's one and done. Yeah, yeah.
Because I read it and passed it to one of my colleagues, and she was saying, "Oh, when are you getting the next one?" I was like, "I don't think there is any." Sorry.
Yeah, he's doing Batman now, isn't he?
Yeah.
Well, he's got the old DC money. I can tell you about him because he was sending me insulting pictures of the people that I look like on television, in his opinion.
The way you treat that poor man, I'm not surprised.
I texted him, and then I texted Laura saying your husband is bullying me, and texted me back saying I'm not bullying you, you big ninny.
There was a great moment when I was looking through some of the stacks, and there was like an older brother and his younger brother there, and they were looking through like the A's, and they were like looking for some alien comics, and he turned around to his little brother and goes, go and tell dad I've hit the mother load. The little kid ran off, came back with the dad, and he's like, the older kid's like, dad, look, I found these aliens versus predator. And dad was like, calm down, it's fine, we'll get to it in time. And it was a nice little moment.
This
sort of torch being passed on.
But
I put a picture of my haul up on it. It's the most liked thing on Instagram, and I actually had to get Gareth to stick his picture up because he had more comics than me. I didn't feel so guilty.
Yeah,
and I Gareth this fucking loads.
Yeah,
yeah.
This time around, I did. First time I went to the mart, there wasn't so many sort of graphic novels, whereas this time there seemed to be a lot more.
Oh, you bought a few, didn't you?
Yeah, I bought quite a few. One of which I'm thoroughly looking forward to reading properly. Tale of Sand. Which I know.
Oh, that's so good, man. Yeah. You know, that's an unmade Frank Oz movie.
Yeah. Jim Henson.
Jim Henson, sorry.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's an unmade script of his. I saw the original pages of that a few years ago. It's Ramon Perez, isn't it?
Yeah. And it's
just gorgeous.
Next level beautiful. So that's already on my shelf.
Yeah.
Yeah. For me to read one day soon. Yeah. And I've got some great sort of back issues and stuff. Now, I didn't have so much of a list this time. One thing I would probably say, if you want to maximize your enjoyment for these sort of things,
go prepared.
Yeah, just pick out, you know, even if you don't have to be a hardcore, you know, I need every issue of this. Just find something that you want to collect? Like the first time I went around, I wanted to get the first issues that had the Marvels of the Wrecking Crew of. So I just, you know, I did some research, had a small list, and just go into those like long boxes and trying to find stuff. And when you do find those comics, just it just reignites. You're like a kid again, aren't you? Just discovering these sort of things.
And I'll say it before.
I've
said it before, and I'll say it again. If you think comics are too expensive, and I will probably make you right on it, if you want to get cheap comics, I mean, go there. I mean, there's four for a pound in some of the stalls.
And one of the, I've forgotten what shop it was, because they're basically all like shops and sort of sellers and things like that. But one of them, did basically all the comics are like a pound, aren't they? They're just like £1 comics.
Yeah, it's weird because some, like, you go to one store and that's marked up for like £3 or £4. And you go to another one and there's like, it's in a bin with 50p. And it's just kind of like, if you wanted to get a run, you'd have to go from stall to stall, but you pick stuff up.
Yeah.
It's pretty galling when I read, I get comics out that's like, I fucking read this back in the day for like full price and it was pretty crap. Here it is here in mint condition for like nothing.
And a couple of the stalls have comics that are only like a year old. You know, and they're
50p
each and stuff.
Yeah. I'm in the zone. We started
shooting the shit with that dude with Malibu.
We just had like that. That's the brilliant thing. Me and Dan are having a conversation about Malibu comics. I'm sure some of you out there might know what we're talking about. Prime.
Yeah.
What was it? Hard Case.
Hard Case. Yeah, yeah.
Rune.
What was it called? The Strangers. You know, there was a team.
Yeah.
I'm not sure if it was the Strangers or something.
And then they did that crossover, didn't they, with the Black Knight and that and Juggernaut, and they went over. Yeah. They didn't join their team.
And me and Dan were just having a conversation about this, and the guy that was looking through the comics next to me just piped in, and then we had a 5-minute conversation with him about the craziness of Malibu comics. You know, you've got to love these moments. I mean, for me personally, there's no sort of event like this that happens near me. It was, you know, it's a proper, you know, I had to make, it's a day out, do you know what I mean? I got a bit of a journey. You get to hang out with some wonderful friends and like just chill out, do some shopping. You know what I mean? I don't buy clothes
nice
or food.
The people who turned up, some good people turned up, didn't they? Yeah. I mean, Nick travelled in and Sarah travelled in and all this sort of thing.
So you know, if you see these sort of events,
So I keep interrupting you tonight, Vince. I'm sorry.
It's because you don't care about me, Dan.
No,
that's true.
I saw Nick's list, like comics he had in his hands, and I was like, "Yep, yeah, that's the comics you're going to get, Nick."
He
got Gru, didn't he? A load of Gru.
Fantastic.
So stay
tuned for the next time we go there. I don't know if it'll be later this year or maybe in the new year, but I'm definitely gonna pop back, cause it's just a nice time. It's a lovely time actually. There you go, Comic Mart. Just look at our Instagrams or our Twitter feeds and you'll see the shit that we bought. But there you go. So do we have any shout outs or anything else we want to talk about, gents?
Yeah, it's a couple. First one I messaged you about earlier was one of the big, what's that?
Sorry, that was a bloody phone.
The first one was very sad to hear that a big name in the UK indie comics, especially from the 90s and 2000s, Terry Wiley, who was writing Petra, etc., and Sleaze Castle, passed away yesterday, so that's all very sad. So Terry's, if you went to Bristol, you'll have definitely bumped into him. Yeah, that's a real shame. Give a little shout out to Nottingham Comic Con, which is coming on the 20th of October. I'm meeting Kev this week for a coffee. Kev Brett, who runs it, along with his good lady wife, Kel. If you go to nottinghamcomiccon.co.uk, you can get your tickets. At it will be Lambo, Eisner winning Hamish Steele, and a host of other people. If you go to at Nottingham Comic, you find them on Twitter. Also, big shout out to Rachel Ball, our past guest, who was on Radio 4 this week. I'm listening to Radio 4. I listen to the Frontline nightly sort of arts programme, and she's on it with Wallace Eats talking about how to make comics. Bit of a surprise.
Lovely.
Yeah, nice to hear. Yeah, very good they were too. Yeah. Thought Bubble's coming up. Come on, mate.
Sorry.
Dan, you are on form tomorrow.
Yeah. Oh, my timing is great. Yeah. John Tony.
Okay. Thought Bubble is coming up in a couple of weeks. We've started getting a lot of, in fact, the two books I'm going to mention in a minute are both preview copies for Thought Bubble. I'll be there at the Nobrow table. We haven't got a table this year, but I'll be at the Nobrow running their table. And it's in the Victoria Hall, table 28. Come and see me. I'm sitting right next to Hamish, so come and get some books by him as well. There you go. Nice. That's what I was going to say. What would you like to say, Dan?
Yeah, cue me in next time so I don't step. We're launching issue 3 of the Awesome Comic.
Nottingham, of course we are. Yeah.
Yeah. We are indeed.
You guys are near enough done. I think we're working on the letters page, and I've got the last bits and bobs to finish off on my pages.
Yeah. Me and Dan were talking about a possible technical issue he's had, which we think is okay, isn't it, Dan? So.
Yeah, this is my second portable hard drive, and I was reading up. When they start failing is when you write to it, it basically corrupts the file. And I had a problem. I worked like for a couple of hours on these pages, and I went to open up on my home machine, and it just like, oh, these are fucked. And I'm like, okay, that's great. But since I had the problems with the last one, I always save stuff to my desktop and to the hard drive just in case stuff like this happened, and a year and a half down the line has happened again, and fortunately I was covered. Yeah. But
I always save my stuff to the dark web. I think it's a good thing to do.
It's what's concerning is like when you do stuff on paper, like as long as you keep that paper safe, you've got the art safe. But when it's digital, it seems to me for always be up in the air. Because like say I put it on a computer, if that computer's fucked, there goes that bit of art.
Yeah, it's when it moves into that digital realm, though, isn't it? Like, because I do my pages original, but once they're scanned in, I am in the lap of the digital gods, as it were. Do you know what I mean? So I could work for ages on a PSD file, save it, open it up, and realise I flattened the fucking thing. You know, there are those moments that happen. So you almost, but you can't. No one can back up everything. They can't back up their backup because they'll. There isn't a hard drive big enough, is there? So just think when you're working, people. But Dan's pages are looking amazing.
Yeah, that's the only bit of this conversation I understand. They are looking good. Yeah. I didn't understand PSD or anything. No, you lost me there.
I know there's some people out there going, yeah, we know what you're talking about, Vince.
Yeah, they do. You need to get out more people who understand that.
I tell you what people need to do. They need to send us... No, this is... No, this isn't a segue. They need to go to Comic House. People, if you've read our comic, then you need to send us a reader letter.
We've got a competition.
Yeah,
we've got a lowbrow book for the best letter.
Yeah, we've got a competition, so the best letter will win a prize this time round. Yeah. We've got a bit of space, and this will probably be the last time we'll do the letter section in the comic.
Yeah.
We're planning something else.
We've got plans for the last issue, haven't we?
Yeah, we've got plans for the last issue. So please just send us... Just have a bit of a laugh. That's what I'm saying. Because whenever I see people reading those letters, they have a proper laugh. I mean, I'm sure Dave Kennedy's going to send us another one.
Hopefully.
Yeah.
We've got another one by
Mauro. Yeah. Oh, God, yeah.
If you can raise a smile out of the person reading it, try and go for that.
Yeah,
I guess for a laugh. Well, but we'll take any letter.
Yeah,
that's it.
But the issue itself is looking great. I cannot wait to put the finishing touches on this. So stay tuned for more talk about that over the next couple of weeks.
So
there you go. So that's our comic, but sometimes we talk about other people's comics. So who wants to
be fair? We've done that all show.
Right. Not only
most of the run of this podcast.
I'm doing great on this show, aren't I? It's treading on people's toes.
You're not only treading on my toes. It seems like you're pissing in my face now, Dan. It's like
or something else equally as nice. It's lucky you weren't on with Mike. He'd probably just fucking kill you. I did actually accuse him of beating up cosplayers in the car park, but he wouldn't go for that one.
No. But anyway, for that, Dan, we're on the recommendation section, and Dan's going to recommend a comic to you lovely listeners first, aren't you, Dan?
Yeah. Oh, fair enough, yeah. No, for it. I'm ready. I spoke to a chap on Twitter.
Grindr?
Not so much talking on that as his photos. But, the lovely, serene place, which is Twitter...
which all it's like the yeah. peak of human interaction. It's just like it's like Star Trek. No one's starting any shit.
It's like the future is perfect. That's how I see it.
It's like a utopia that Twitter is that utopia and we're all moving towards it. And I spoke to a chap called Charles Raymond, and he was working on a book called Death Incorporated.
Oh, one. Raymo?
Yeah. And he...
you don't know who he is, do you, Tony?
No. And he was looking for reviewers. And I said, you know, I work on some tin pot show that does reviews.
This is Vanguard Gold.
Yeah. So, I feel like he's trying to poison us from the inside. Did you ever feel like it's like sabotage?
So, unfortunately, he's done an absolutely bang up job because it's a 150 page comic. And I started reading it yesterday and got sort of 30 in. And I thought, well, how many pages is this? It's 150 pages, so it's real bang for your buck. Before I get too much into it, if you go, you can get it off his Etsy store for $3.99. Oh, you can get it through Comic House for $3.99, and it's on an Etsy store, which I'll send you the link for, Vince. Essentially, it's about a chap called Stan, and he does a fairly mundane. Yeah, he does a fairly mundane job, and on his way out of his office building, he's run over. And then ushered into the afterlife, where it's run by the company Death Inc. And he has to live like a second life within the afterlife, which is almost as tedious and boring as his real one. But then shit starts going down. It's really nice. It's a nice little humor comic. So all done in black and white. Some real life page layout and some compositions. What's really interesting is the quality from page one even to page 10, it's like it's taking leaps and bounds as it goes along. So it's really nice to see an artist sort of find their groove and get into it. It's almost like, I don't know if you have this, Vince, if you start drawing something, essentially the first couple of pages, almost like by the time you got to the end of the project, they're like done by a different hand. You'll see this, I'm sure, when we do our, by the time we get to issue four with our one, that the first couple of pages you're still finding your feet and finding how to
completely
do the characters and do what you want to do, but
you're finding that rhythm of your style, aren't you, for that particular story,
for that one project. And certainly this one, Raymond kind of like really slots into his style, and once it's locked in, it's all systems go. So I've really enjoyed, I've only read a third of it so far. I'll probably finish off the rest of it when I'm going into work tomorrow on the train.
Nice.
Nice work.
Good.
Check that one out.
Nice.
Cool.
And I also read a crap load of comics on Comic House as well.
Blimey.
Obviously, this is only one ago.
Yeah. So but, well, in a couple of weeks' time, we're planning to have a show because we've got an awful lot of awesome books to talk about. And they are stacking up. And we are reading them. You know, so if you lovely people send something in, we're looking at it and we are paying attention to you. So we might do... Not a quick fire round, because obviously we're going to show you awesome love, but we're going to go through an awful lot of books, I think, just the three of us.
Just to get back up.
Yeah. So
notice, I did it again, on Comic House, the number one comic is Bruce. And we talked about that a lot.
Yeah. We're not going to say...
The top 10 is littered with comics we've mentioned on the show.
That's down to us, that.
We're not going
to
say
if you created the comic, Bruce, then please send us money.
Yeah, we're not going to say we're trend makers, you know, or fashionistas, but you know, proof's in the pudding, isn't it?
Yeah,
influencers. Yeah. Social.
Is that local? I hope we influence no one. anyway, right? Do you want to go next?
I've got two, actually.
Oh, well, how about you do one, and then I'll do one, then you finish us off.
Okay, yeah. My second one's quite a short one, but the first one... I've started getting books now for Thought Bubble. Oh, in fact, it's about the third week of books I've started getting for Thought Bubble now.
Yeah.
And I got sent The Needle Man by Martin Simpson, who is a listener to the show.
I've seen this.
Which I showed you this, didn't I?
Mm-hmm.
Published by Soaring Penguin. It was originally published in Meanwhile, the anthology out of Soaring Penguin, which I'm sorry to say I do not read, but it's fucking outstanding. I've got to tell you, it's like the best thing the magazine could publish at the moment. It's got that look about it, you know.
Yeah.
The cover is this sort of, you'd be forgiven for thinking it's a sort of steampunk zombie cowboy funeral director with a little, you know,
That old chestnut.
A sort of real sort of close up on his sort of zombie grey lined wrinkled face. But what you see behind it is this sort of beautiful golden city where the lights from the city are sort of shooting up into the sky and the night sky and stuff. And it's a great cover. If you want to get a cover, you want to see a cover that's by me, this has got it written all over it.
Yeah.
Like, gorgeous design to it. So the Needle Man is this character who is in a sort of other world stroke future stroke strange city. And it's his job to hunt down people who are on the run, who should, in other words, be working at the factories, the sort of bleak grey factories. A lot of the people are grey in this, and a lot of the city backgrounds are coloured. It's a real, real interesting facet to it. He's called a Needle Man because whilst he does carry a gun and shoot people, he uses needles to torture them to get information out of them. So he's this real bleak character. I compared it, I think, in a review I wrote online to that movie Dark City. Do you remember that movie from a few years ago? It's got that sort of strangeness about it, and it has a real iconic strangeness. And it goes from some sort of clever layouts of not like loads of panels on a page, but a few panels on the page, and then he really does open up your eye with some interesting single page, double page splashes that are just beautifully coloured, like incredible stuff. He drops you into this world that is bleak, and life is cheap, and everyone is sort of living in these little boxes and going to their jobs and their numbers rather than names. But what he does from it, he creates this sort of character who at one point feels a certain amount of freedom in his life. His life changes, it takes a turn. And it's a beautiful story for just that, even. It's this sort of, I mean, you know the movie Metropolis. There's a touch of that in it, you know. And he's this sort of strange lawman stroke constable who sort of wanders around in it and drives this sort of old school classic car. I'd say, I think I mentioned this in the review, but I would say there's a little bit too much exposition towards the end of it, and I think it's too talky towards the end. It's very, very well laid out, and the pacing is great to start with. And then there's too much conversation towards the end of it, I would say. Okay. I really liked it. It's about to go. I think it's getting a release. Yeah, it has. It's getting a release at Thought Bubble. And I know if you follow Martin on Twitter, you'll see that his box of comics has arrived.
Yeah.
So we'll stick his details in the show notes. But either that will go to neverunending.blogspot.co.uk, and you'll see all the details and the ways to buy and stuff, because I'm written them down here.
I'm a big fan of Martin's work. Thing. Like the artwork's unbelievable. I saw collected anthologies, British Showcase. Have you seen those?
Yes.
Yeah.
He did a story in one of those, and that was the first time I sort of saw his work. And it was the first story that started off the book. And it was almost, it's not fair to have a story, you know, his sort of art start off an anthology book, because what's going to come after it? Do you know what I mean? it's beautiful, it's unique, and that's what I like about it. It's got its own voice and its own style, and just the wonderful sort of colours and textures he uses for the pages. It brings the reader into the book, doesn't it?
It's a real detail to it. I look at it and think, I don't know a fucking clue how he did that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's got this, that sort of thing.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, thanks for filling in there, V, because you've managed to get him. I've pulled up his. So if you go to etsy.com/shop/tweakhead, which is TWEEKHED, you can find his work. Martin's illustration.com also. Yeah. I read this, and then I ordered a anthology title and some prints from him, which literally arrived like the following day. He posted them out so quickly, which is real worth a look. He's in the Originals marquee at Thought Bubble, table number 61. There you go.
Yes,
really good, really impressive. And it's at such a point where I was just going to, I do this all the time, I know, but I was going to talk about it on the show, and I got so excited I had to put something. I was on a 2.5 hour train journey. I thought, nah, fuck it, I'm just going to put something online to show the glorious artwork on it. You know? It's well worth your time. You know?
Yeah,
definitely.
It's definitely a creator that we're definitely probably going to speak more of in the future.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yes, it's that time of year. It's Thought Bubble. Everyone's got books coming out, and everyone's putting out amazing books. Like, the quality of some of the stuff coming out this year.
Oh, mate. I think it's the best year I've seen it so far.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've been covering comics coming out of Thought Bubble since it started, and this is the best year, definitely.
We are in a very fortunate position that some of these lovely people send us PDFs. Much like the Needleman, we got that one as well, and we get previews of these wonderful books for you people to probably spend your good money on. So it comes as no surprise that my choice this week is another book coming out of Thought Bubble. It is the Wine and Zine anthology.
Yes. We've ordered a look at this, haven't we? It's fucking brilliant.
Now it is by from the Wine and Zine Collective. They are Zara Williams, Jessica Leslau. I hope I got that. I probably got that wrong. Gemma Roberts, Claire Spiller, and Bryony Evans.
Our pals.
Our pals.
One of our
friends
favourite
of the
shows. Yeah. Or do we call it the Wine Show?
They are welcome back anytime. But and they've put out a lot of the stuff they've put out so far has been like art books, prints, etc. You know, they've put out smaller type books. This is the first time. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That wonderful charity zine that was just full of amazing pictures of dogs, wasn't it?
It's brilliant. Yeah,
absolutely brilliant. So they do a lot of great work, but this is the first time that they've done a sequential book coming from a lot of them. Now, Wine and Zine, for those who don't know, they're five best friends and fabulous ladies creating art and stories together, fueled by wine and laughter. I mean, they're sort of. Their humour and their personality just goes through everything that they do, isn't it? All their books.
Yeah.
I mean, within the, you know, the book opens up with "Hello, new friend," and it's got a paragraph talking to the reader. So, because if you pick up the book, it means you're a winner and you're their favourite person. So that's one reason.
Okay.
Never mind this review. That's one reason to get this book. But yeah, this one has like five stories by the main lot. There is a Roy and Ray Get Ice Cream by Zara Williams. There's Rise by Jessica Leslau. There's Defining by Gemma Roberts. His Voice in the Trees by Claire Spiller. And Leap by Bryony Evans. I don't want to talk too much about what the stories are. But they're five different styles, wildly different styles, that just work brilliantly. There's not a You know, we talk sometimes
there is
about
not a duff one, is it?
There is, like this is an anthology that absolutely sings, because when we got the PDF, I thought, oh yes, this is it. This is the this is what we've been waiting for from this group. You know, some comics, but with that, you think, you know, are they as good as we hope they are? Yes, they are, and more so. This is such. Quality.
I mean, independently, we're all big fans of their work. You know, Claire Spiller. I got her book, and that the thing she did for Inktober last year, which is gorgeous stuff.
Yeah.
And there's not a person amongst this that I would be afraid and worry about recommending them to a publisher. No, I think they're that good. You know, it's that sort
everything in this book is so accomplished. It's so like professionally done. It's really great. Really solid work.
It has.
I'm never going with any of them to get ice cream, but yeah.
but it's got a wonderful personality and character and a confidence. Whereas, you know, you probably speak to them individually and they'll be like, really? Oh god, we're worried. They're probably nervous about how it's going to be at Thought Bubble. I don't think they're going to have any issues. This is going to absolutely fly off the shelves, I think. But everyone's going to have their own favourite story. I'm not going to name mine, but you know, I think I have to talk about each one individually just a little bit. Now, Roy and Ray Get Ice Cream by Zara Williams is such a... I would say it's the most colourful strip of the book, and that's saying something, because
it's slightly more abstract than a couple of them, isn't it? It's got a sort of pop art feel to it almost.
Yeah,
a bit to me.
And like two friends getting ice cream and the conversation that they're having. There's a lot more to it than that, but... There's a wonderful spread where they're picking out flavours of ice cream, and it starts off, how about a scoop of honeycomb, caramel, cookie dough, blah blah blah, and then it goes sea salt, unicorn tears, salmon, some shamrocks, a couple of mermaid scales, vanilla, some monster goo. So you can see that the flavours are getting a bit crazier and crazier and crazier. So, and that I think the colourful sort of style of the story fits perfectly with that. It's got a real nice sort of sense of humour, personality, and the main two characters. It kind of like when I picked it up, it felt like they may already be a thing. These two characters, you know, she may have done them, you know, Zara may have done these somewhere before, and I feel like I think this is a tick for the story. It feels like I've just dropped into a moment in someone's life for a couple of pages, and then I drop out again. Does that make sense? It's not. But it all just works brilliantly. Rise by Jessica is a wordless story. This one it's just poetic on another level. this girl she's sort of being held down by her long hair.
Really nice.
Some subtle colours going on. Poetic storytelling that leaves you with a massive smile on your face when I finished reading that. And that was only a couple of pages. That's what I think, what I admire about anthologies when they're done really well. They manage to do in the realm of 4 and 5 pages what some graphic novels can't achieve. You know, they manage to get you to feel things, don't they, or react a certain way.
I think to get that over in 4 pages is so well done.
Yeah, to do it without words as well, without forced sort of emotion, it's like a, you know, it's almost like I was watching an animation that wasn't animated. Do you know what I mean? It just felt like a. Then we've got Defining by Gemma Roberts. Which is an autobiographical tale of just
a really honest one, isn't it?
I tell you what, this is one of the for me personally, it's one of the best autobiographical comics I've read, and you know, and she managed to do that in a short couple of pages, but you really it's personal. It even says on some of the pages, like, you know, she's certainly nervous about whether she should do this comic or not. You know, she says, I've even reconsidered whether I could make this comic a few times. But I would say, well done for doing it, because this is just a fantastic couple of pages, very honest, and so much more thoughtful in its message and, you know, what she's saying, that it's hard to put into words. You know, I think this might be my favourite one of the five, probably only by 1%. And I think mainly because Gemma is one of the creators that we haven't seen as much work of as some of the others. So this was a real, you know, eye opener. Really nice. And then you've got Leap by Bryony Evans, which is just complete. Anyone who's met Bryony will know that, you know, she has energy and personality for days. And this is like something out of a Legend of Zelda style video game, with a real charm, and it's just a character going on a little adventure and the story within that. I don't want to spoil too much about it, and I hope I haven't spoiled too much about all of these stories as well.
Yeah.
But definitely, this is definitely a recommendation for Thought Bubble. I think they're going to do quite well. I hope they do. But if you want to pre-order it anyway. You can pre-order it on from their website, their Big Cartel, which we'll put a link in the show notes, for only £4. So that's for a 32-page full colour book, which I think's quite a good price in this.
We've
talked about sort of prices of books and stuff, but no, I think that's well worth your money. So whether you get it at Thought Bubble or from online, so you can go wineandzine.bigcartel.com. You can follow them on Twitter at wineandzine. And the only problem I'd say with this book is they've shown how good they are at comics now, so I want more of their comics, please. Do you know what I mean? So what's next? That's the next thing. So yes, that's mine. So Tony, do you want to sign us off?
Yeah, I've got another one from another one of our favourite people, and that's John Tucker.
Yes.
Talking of good pricing, this is a comic called, well, technically I suppose it's not a comic, it's a series of illustrations with I don't want to give away what the writing is on the opposite page, and I tried to avoid it during the written review I did this, but there's a commentary and there are comments that are on the facing page to the illustration. So one page illustration, one page minimal text, I suppose. And it's Adrift by John Tucker. It's 40 pages black and white, and it's only £2, so that's another good bit of price in there. I don't know if anyone's ever heard I compared this to
the Douglas Adams quote, which said, the way to fly is jump off a chair and miss the floor. And it's got that sort of strange sort of English banality to it. But this story basically is takes place in England and the world to a certain extent, where gravity just sort of stopped working and went away. And it opens on a sort of a splash of a street sign that's broken and a fork that's floating past the camera, you know. So it turns out that 2 years ago, give or take, as he quotes, gravity went away. So it suddenly just upped and left, and people have to sort of cope with it gone. And it's done with that sort of typical that we know now, John Tucker, sort of funny, wry, sarcastic, slightly dry humour.
There's a conversational sort of tone to the
I can't give it away. Because the last page, something happens, you realise what has happened, don't you?
Yeah.
Have you read it yet, V?
Yeah. Loved it.
So you know what happens towards the end. But the it's funny. There's one bit that's he's sort of talking, and he's showing examples of what's happened now that the sort of gravity's gone away. And there's one bit where he says, he seems to comment that a lot of old people seem to be having sex.
Oh my God, that page.
And there's, let's call them chubby old white blokes doing something, which I was surprised at. Do you know what I mean?
I was really surprised. I laughed a lot.
Yeah. I kind of thought, I'm glad that old people don't really care, so they just go and do that. Do you know what I mean? There's this sort of, I'll wear purple kind of thing about it, isn't there? But turned up to 11. So the world changes and you kind of figure out, and it's not like the world changes, everything goes to shit, and so everyone starts killing each other with samurai swords. You know, there's no sort of Walking Dead element to it. It's it's actually kind of nice in a way. You know, it's nice that we've got this sort of apocalyptic book, and it's kind of nice. If you go right to the back, it did make me chuckle, because obviously there has to be a picture of John Tucker in his sort of author photographs towards the back there. And there's also, he's been a little can you spot the item, did you read that bit, Vic?
Yeah,
the batteries, like you can go through and spot various things, and it is, no, you don't win prizes, but the implication is it's a little competition that you could have won a prize on, you know. There's a little sort of cool thing. It's only £2.
I know.
Real fun. If you go to johntucker.co.uk, get a copy. Twitter is at johntuckerart, Instagram johntucker, and he'll be launching it at Thought Bubble. So I'm looking forward to that as well.
John is going to be a future guest on the show very soon.
Yeah. Nice.
And sometimes when people make funny books, they're not as funny in real life. I think that's just the way of comedy anyway, isn't it, a lot of the time? But we were lucky enough to sit next to John at Cardiff Expo, and he is as funny.
Yeah.
So it's going to be a cracking show, I think.
So he has got some cracking books out there.
Yeah.
And I know you're a John Tucker completist, aren't you?
I am. I need to get this hard copy.
Yeah, I'll have to grab you a copy. But they're all brilliant, and they're all funny. Like the one about the bloke who keeps emptying bags of pubic hair in the sea.
No, he doesn't. He's in a lighthouse and he's worried about the. He thinks that there's someone from the local barbers doing it. So he watches from his lighthouse to see them turn up in their van and do it. And then something happens that you do not expect.
Yeah, which I quite like.
Great.
Yeah. Or the bloke with the see-through head. That's another good one.
Yeah.
They're quite wacky, but they work. Do you know what I mean? They're not wacky and for only one of our tastes. They're actually wacky and work. So. Yeah. Go find him.
And even though I've only just recently been introduced to his work, I wrote a short comic script recently, and I realised afterwards it had the same sort of conversational tone. Like, you know, it was really, I used the similar sort of narrative devices he did through it, and it was so much fun. So he's already influenced me as well.
I want to see one of those author banners for you next time.
Oh God! What way? He looks like a creepy magician.
Why don't you get that picture that I took of you coming out the toilet in Swindon?
No,
and put that on your
banner.
No, banners aren't that expensive. I might do one myself with that picture on for you.
Right. I know Photoshop, Tony. And I could destroy you.
I've shown you some of the Photoshop that my mate at work does of me, haven't I?
Yeah, they're
cracking.
Sexiest thing I've ever seen. And anyway, thank you for listening. On that bombshell, we hope you enjoyed this week's interview, and obviously, like what we've been talking about tonight. If you want to discuss anything that we've talked about, you can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com, once again, if you want to send us any letters or fan art for our own comics, then send them to tony.awesomecomicspod@gmail.com, because he's the editor and collates all that stuff.
Yeah, come on, you wankers. Yeah. Let's have some letters. We've got at least a couple of spaces for letters. Come on, you twats.
I really feel we're doing a good cop, bad cop thing.
Yeah, we're all right there, I think.
Yeah. Follow us on Twitter @TheAwesomePod, where we will be, who knows, maybe we'll start some polls again if the time is right.
Well, we've done a poll for ages. We used to like a poll,
yeah,
didn't we?
Yeah.
You loved a poll, didn't you?
It's how I made a lot of my money.
We're discussing doing some more genre ones, aren't we?
So yes.
Yeah. We might offer up anyone who has an idea for a genre.
Yeah.
We
could. Yeah. Anal genre. Is not a genre. Let me point that out to you.
No,
count as a whole genre.
It's supposed to be spelled annual, Tony. We're supposed to be talking about annuals, not...
Oh, annual. Yeah. Why do you think Lana Lang was called that? Think of it in reverse. That's all I'm saying.
Oh! Oh, that's my mind blown. Much like you lovely people who do Facebook, facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast is where you can go on and you can like us or follow us or whatever you do on Facebook, but we post up the episodes and more. And also, if you want to talk about comics and just like have a real good time, then go to Awesome Comics Talk, the group on Facebook. Lots of great conversation going on there, a lot of it funny, so we keep it going. Go on, Dan.
Just bring up to say, look, I read this comic, I think it was great, and then people can talk about it. It doesn't have to be show centric.
Yeah.
I'm just okayed a couple of posts while we've been talking. Yeah. People talking about all sorts of thing on there.
Yeah. It's a great page that is. Anyone else could jump in then?
No.
Oh, that's right. Calm yourself, Dan. I can feel you on the edge. You just want to, don't you?
I'm just waiting for someone to say something, and then I'll tread on their toes and jump
talk right. over it.
Oh, okay. So thank you for listening to us. You touche. Do you know what? I was waiting for that. I thought I'm just gonna cue him up because. But what's the website they can listen to us, Dan?
You fuck.
Thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the website or awesomecomics.podbean.com. Thank you for listening. If you listen to us on iTunes, subscribe. Leave a review. Just genuinely.
We've had a couple of nice reviews.
Yes,
finally,
thank you.
Two nice reviews. Thank you, guys.
Yeah. I got the Podbean app finally, and there's a ton of them on there.
I've been liking them. Yeah.
Anyone who said a nice word about the show, thank you very much. You're the reason we keep doing this. So, and also, thank you if you listen to us on Spotify. Our Spotify listens are going up as well. So,
cool, aren't we?
We're also on networks like Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife. What are the networks we on, Tony?
Podramba. Thanks to Stuart McCune for sending me the cover of an Italian comic called Ramba, which is basically a female Rambo with her bits out.
Is that the one where she got a leather thong with like some studs,
spiky bra and
Jesus
stuff?
Jesus Christ! Yes, so that's not safe for work.
Make lifestyle judgments.
No, she can wear whatever she wants. Anyway. Where can people find us online, etc., Tony?
You can find me in real life at Table 28 Victoria Thought Bubble.
Smooth.
Let me know if you want a copy of Hilda, because I've got a feeling with the Hilda series dropping the day before, they're going to sell out really quickly. So if you are a listener and you want a copy of a Hilda book, then please let me know in advance and I'll make sure I put one away for you.
You said it. I saw someone talking about it on Twitter, like a big name, and there was hundreds of comments talking about it, saying this looks great.
The
Netflix series, so I imagine Hilda's going to go through the roof.
Yeah,
and we're limited in the number we've got, so in other words, as many as I can get in my car. So if you want one, then please do let me know. I can imagine I'll be doing sales at Watford Gap, Leicester East Services, you know, all the services on the way out the motorway with this. So otherwise find me neverunending.blogspot.co.uk or SOSEZOHYZ on Twitter. There you go.
Nice. Dan?
I'm on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at vanguardcomic.com.
Nice. You're also busting out some lovely commissions and stuff like that at the moment, Dan.
Yeah, that pageant today was great, mate. Yeah.
Cheers, yeah.
And that Ghost Rider you did. Ooh, lovely.
Yeah, nice.
Yeah, that went. I offered it up on Facebook to the nearest and dearest, and then the plebeians on Twitter. And they
plebeians. Your Ghost Rider had a real sort of Chris Bocello sort of style to it that I really liked.
Oh, cheers! Yeah, I don't usually work
as you well know, too much with the old pen and inks, but I got it out for that.
Yeah, cool.
It's just charcoal and bodily fluids, isn't it? That's normally your...
Yeah. That's my preferred medium.
You can follow me on Twitter at Jester Diablo, and you can find out more about my comic at theredmaskfrommars.com. Thank you for listening, folks. It's been another epic show full of comics goodness.
That's it.
Yeah. Yeah.
We've been on twice today.
We're all a little bit tired, so we're going to go have some Horlicks, put our slippers on, and watch The Great British Bake Off.
On a side, I've been playing that Spider-Man game. Oh, it's the tits. That's really good.
So we'll find out how Dan's getting on with that next week as well. So thank you for listening. And from Dan, Tony and myself, have a brilliant week. And what should they do, Dan?
Stay awesome.
Thanks.
I was going to drop an F-bomb in there. I thought better not.
No.
I nearly said fuck.
See you, everyone.
See ya.
I'm back.
Hello, dude.
Hello.
Yeah.
I had a dog emergency.
Oh no,
is he all right?
Yeah, he's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah. I saw some pictures of your dog on Facebook. Yeah. What's he called?
Bob. Well, we have two dogs. The other one's called Mac.
Right. You love the one, the adult male one word named. I noticed like Larry, for example, in Badger.
Yeah.
And, Dave in Nexus, yeah. I don't know why, but just Larry makes me laugh. Whenever he calls anyone Larry, it just makes me laugh.